Will come to order. Will everybody please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country, and in honor of the garrison flag that we have at the back of the...
Minutes of the Board of Directors meeting for July 28th. We had a snafu with our recording equipment, so those weren't able to get completed. And then item 9A under regular business, which is to consider adoption of Resolution 48-2005 awarding a contract for the CCSD Solids Dewatering Facility Project. That bid submittal deadline was just day before yesterday, and there's some more analysis that we need to go into. It'll be presented next month at the next board meeting. And that's all.
So item 9A is deleted, and consent calendar item 7B is deleted. Is that correct? Thank you.
Yes.
Any other additions, deletions, or pulled consent calendar items? Hearing none, the agenda stands as amended. There are no acknowledgments or presentations this morning, so we will move right into special reports, and we'll have the Sheriff's Department report. Is there a representative from the Sheriff's Department here? Apparently not. The next item on the agenda is the Water Master Plan Desalination and Water Storage Facilities Report. We are holding this over until... later in the meeting, and with the board's consensus, we will substitute that report for item 9A, which has been deleted. So we'll bring it up at that time. That's item 9A under regular business. It's now time for the managers and board reports, general manager's report.
Sheriff, I just walked in.
The sheriff's representative just walked in. Would you like to... come up and give the sheriff's report?
I wasn't briefed with any information.
Okay.
Other than the fact that the B of A parking lot, the graveyard shift has been advised to start siding and towing vehicles.
Thank you. General manager's report.
Just very briefly, to let the public know that the district offices and utility operations will be closed on Monday, September 5th, in observance of the Labor Day holiday. If there are any problems or concerns, customers can call 927-6223 to report those issues. And then I've given you the report on the Parks and Recreation from the PROS Commission August 10th meeting. Basically, Jim Ellman, chairman, issued the committee assignments to review the report of the CCSD 2004-2005 Ad Hoc Parks and Recreation Committee report. We have gone before the SLO County Planning Commission to make sure that we follow through with what the PROS Commission wants to do, this board, and in compliance with the East West Ranch Management Plan with regard to the zoning of the East Ranch. From open space, a portion that has been identified for the community park to recreation. And then the final discussion was had on the lawn bowlers' request for some funding assistance. We were asked to look for some grant opportunities for $5,000 a year sustenance to, in order for them to gain money to put in a new green at their facility. And that was it.
Thank you. Any questions of the general manager? Thank you, Tammy. Fire Chief's report.
Thank
Bob
you,
Putney.
Thank you, Mr. President. Of note under prevention and education is that we've done 91 fire plan reviews as of the date of this report this year. So, again, what seems to be outpacing everything else is residential remodels. This is a great time to remind everybody to be careful about barbecues. Hopefully the fog will leave our coast here soon and we'll get our traditional Central Coast summer. The vegetation is dry. The fog has been lingering a little bit, so I believe a lot of residents are alerted into the fact that the vegetation is still green and won't burn. That's not the case. So we ask people to be very careful with barbecues and any outdoor burning of any sort when they're cooking their food. We have no pending or open fire investigations. Those have all been solved. Today at the board meeting, you'll have a public hearing regarding closing the fire hazard fuel reduction program for 2005. I'll report on that later. Last weekend, the weekend before last, we held for the first time in Cambria's history the second chipping event in the year. Normally we have one chipping weekend, and we did two. I didn't have the stats available for this presentation, so I'll have it at the board meeting next month. However, we did chip at 61 locations. So I believe that brings us up to 51 locations more that we chipped in the two events than we ever have before in the 5 or 7 years that we've been doing the chipping event. Actually, that would be the sixth year because it's the eighth annual. There's a brand-new Living with Fire document that's out in the back of the room. There are copies. It was distributed, and it was out in the Tribune. This is a document that was put together with a state grant and the San Luis Obispo County Fire Safe Council. This has even better graphics, I think, than last year. This is a much better document than years before. There are copies of these in the back room. We actually have additional copies at the fire station if anybody would like one. It is an excellent document to show you how to otherwise be able to purchase. That includes a breathing apparatus air compressor where we'll be able to recharge our own self-contained breathing apparatus cylinders at our fire station instead of driving them to Morro Bay or San Luis Obispo. So that will obviously be shared and used by CDF and Hearst Castle Fire Department. So it'll not only benefit us, but the community around us. It'll also provide for an escalated enhancement of changing over our breathing apparatus. We're still using two different types of breathing apparatus. Every year we were trying to purchase more and more so that we eventually retired the old version. So we'll be able to accomplish that with this grant. So I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions of the fire chief?
Yes.
Yes, Director Chaldicott.
Yes, Chief, as I mentioned to you earlier, on our death, on the right-hand side going down towards the church and Highway 1 Junction, there's several lots which have just not been touched, and the grass is as high as his desk. And just about as Brian. Now, I'm wondering if there's any way you can lean on those individuals to clear her, because it's so close that a cigarette out of the car would just start a real fire there.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up to me. Yeah. I will definitely look at that, and I'll get Captain Hollingsworth on that and see what we can do. We'll get that cleared up.
It's just that it's so close to the highway, which means that people are just getting off or just getting on.
Yeah. Right.
Thank you.
On the other positive note of that, if you'll notice out here next to Highway 1, I was real proud that Caltrans went in and cleaned the roadway between the Highway 1, what they call the fog line, and the fence that goes along for state highway property. That was heavily overgrown and was a serious concern for any embers or discarded burning materials going out, starting a fire which would threaten the entire business district down here, and they did clear this entire section. So I'm real happy to see that that's occurred. So slowly but surely we're making better and better progress.
I would agree on the credit side. There are some very well cleaned areas there which you should be proud of. Thank you.
Chief, to what do you ascribe the increase in the number of calls? Anything in particular?
I don't think there's any one thing in particular. The thing that's of note to, I'm sure, everybody in the audience and to the board members as well this year, is that San Luis Obispo County has had, I think, the single highest number of vehicle-related fatalities this year. We've had a tremendous jump in not only medical calls and assisting elderly residents who have fallen, maybe aren't hurt, but need help up, and their loved ones or they live alone and can't get up. But we've had a large number of vehicle accident calls this year and a significantly higher amount of fatalities, either in Cambria or outside Cambria, that we've responded to assist San Luis Obispo County Fire Department.
Do the vehicle accident calls in any way correspond with tourism?
I think they kind of span the entire year. The most recent ones that we've seen here, where there was a child fatality, was a tourist from out of the area, and the other one, which was a fatality up just north of us in San Simeon, was a local resident who was killed on Highway 1. Mm-hmm. So I think they span both locals and tourists alike. I just think as we get better cars and we move faster and life moves faster, we don't pay attention to little things. Every once in a while, somebody pays the ultimate price.
Right. Any other questions of Chief Putney? Thank you, Chief. We'll now have the utility manager's report. Brian Bode.
Good afternoon. You've got a copy that I hand-delivered a copy here. I was on vacation, so I didn't make it into the regular agenda. But I'd like to report that the well levels are starting to drop a little bit, but they're still in pretty good shape. San Simeon well field is the second highest time in 18 years, second highest level, so we're in good shape there. And a lot of that has to do with running Santa Rosa at the same time. Our plan for running Santa Rosa is to run it by looking at the creek, and we're going to keep the water in the creek running 24/7, just like we have for the last 5 years. And we think that the Santa Rosa Creek is one of our crown jewels, and we want to keep it for everybody to look at and enjoy, and and for all creatures great and small to enjoy it. A San Simeon well gradient, it's positive, so we don't have to worry about that. Solids dewatering press, we picked up a minor use permit from the county. We've got 2 years to get the thing built or get it started anyway. Hopefully it'll be quicker than that. We also went out to bid for the press, and we've got two proposals in, and they're as different as apples and oranges, and we're going to take a little bit of analyzing to make sure we get the right thing and or whether we want to go out to rebid or whatever. So we'll let you know at the next meeting what our finding is. The AMR system, the automatic meter reading, is going along a little slower than we thought, but they're over halfway done, and they expect to be done by the end of September, and that's good news for us. Santa Rosa Creek Trail, Ben Bohr's been working on this, and this is the portion of a trail that goes from Windsor in front of the wastewater treatment plant to the East-West Ranch, and it's almost complete. It's scheduled to be complete by September 5th, and that's a real nice access, a real nice hike through there on our sewer easement, and it's not
Prop 1A, which went through last year, and of course that safeguarded the additional taking away of on the rate of property tax money from safety, fire, and police officers. And the second thing that is equally as important is the fact that the district, when we turn in our annual financial transactions report to the state, we show property tax as being earmarked for the fire department. If we didn't report it as such, we would be hit with the ERAF. So I just wanted to kind of make that clear as well. The district audit is going to be taking place the first week or the week after Labor Day. And one item that I would like to report on that is not in my report, and it's kind of a tag on to the AMR. The fact that a meter has been pulled out of the ground and a new one put in doesn't automatically equate to the fact that it's up and running. There is a whole host of processes that must be done, particularly at the administrative office, in order to make this whole automated meter program work. Kathy Fry in our office has been spearheading that effort, and she, along with Corey Ryan and Regina Holland, are putting in a whole lot of work. It's just a lot of internal control to make sure that the numbers that are coming in on those new meters, because they all have a new meter number, there's a new transmitter number, that all has to be input into the billing software, tested to make sure that we're picking up all of the accounts, that all of the meters are being read properly. So I just kind of want to add on to that, that it's quite a task at the administrative level as well. It's not just a simple little thing of popping in a meter in the ground and pulling out the old one. We've got to keep track of the reads, the old ones and the new ones. So that's all that I have to report on. Are there any comments or questions?
Any questions of the finance officer? Apparently not. Patrick, would you just confirm that this new furniture that we have today was paid for with grant funds?
I can categorically state that that new furniture was paid for with a grant fund. It was called the PIG grant. It came from the county, and this did not cost us a dime.
Woohoo! Thank you. Appreciate that.
Which is always good news to a financial guy.
Right.
How much could we sell it for?
Yeah. Good question. Good question. We'll now move on to member and committee reports, board member and committee reports. Are there any board member reports or committee reports? Apparently not. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Item 7B has been deleted from the consent agenda. The general manager will read the remaining consent items.
Okay, thank you. 7A is to approve expenditures for the month of July 2005. 7C is to adopt Resolution 45-2005, authorizing a professional services agreement with Coastwise Group, Dean Coker, for planning and permit assistance. Item 7D is to approve transfer of waiting list position with retirement of 3 of 5 lots, and that's parcel 023.142.032, inadvertently merged with improved double lot parcel. Well, that was a mouthful. Item 7E, extension of intent to serve for 7 units of multifamily and issuance of intent to serve for the remaining 11 units, J.E. Lindsay applicant, all on APN 024.191.060. And 7F, adopt Resolution 46-2005, approving contract with California Conservation Corps to construct the East-West Ranch Bluff Trail improvements and authorize a 10% contingency fee.
Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the balance of the consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. It's now time for hearings and appeals. The first hearing is a request for a water bill modification. The applicant is Fred Siegel, Jr. Is there a staff report?
Yes, thank you. This is the item that was brought before the board last month, and you asked for it to be brought back. I was not here last month. I was absent, so I did not prepare the report or have an opportunity to reveal this particular water bill mod. Since I've been back and had a chance to do some further investigation, you might note that the recommendation is different than it was last month. I'm recommending that we approve the request for water bill modification. There are circumstances that presented themselves that were potentially beyond the customer's control. They are related to potential health issues. This is the March-April 2005 utility bill. The average consumption for this customer is 12 units. That customer has been keeping their account current, which is one of the requirements to pay the average consumption on their account, which they have done. If you approve or accept my recommendation, the fiscal impact is stated there that it's a loss of water revenues of $281.55, lost sewer revenues of $78.40. The consumption in question is for 61 units, consumption of 12 units. And I think maybe Mr. Siegel or his niece may be present. Are either of them present here today?
Does that conclude your report?
That's it.
Yeah. Tammy, any questions of the general manager? This is a public hearing. Those wishing to address the board on this matter can step forward.
I actually have a question.
Director Funky Ballou.
If the user receives relief today, is he barred from seeking relief forever?
Yes. It's a one-time only.
And the basis of your recommendation is a confidential health issue that you feel comes within the guidelines?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
The public hearing is still open. Is there anybody that wishes to address the board on this matter? Apparently not. The public hearing is closed. What is the pleasure of the board? Director Coben?
I'll move adoption of the general manager's recommendation.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the recommendation of the general manager. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion. Let the record reflect that it's a 4-1 vote. Director Funky Ballou votes no. The second hearing is on a request for a water bill modification. The applicant is Cheryl Parisian. Is there a staff report?
Yes, thank you. This water bill modification is, we're recommending denial. It does, first of all, it doesn't qualify for the board action because under our water bill modification policy, the premises were used as a vacation rental during the billing period. Even though the customer did plead that there was only one vacation renter during the billing period for a total of 3 days from December 31st to January 2nd. So I will go no further unless you would like for me to read the rest of the report.
Any questions of the general manager? Director Chaldicott.
Yeah, I guess my conclusion is that when the renter wasn't there, the premises were unoccupied. So
correct.
Yeah, okay. And the other thing was that the pipe that burst was, I assume, not irrigation.
It was, it was the main service line, and it was as a result of tree roots.
Yeah. And the other thing was, I believe we have precedent. We've had a similar one in the past in the storm activity. And I don't remember the recommendation at that time, but obviously I guess the precedent should be considered.
Any other questions of the general manager? This is a public hearing. Is there anybody who wishes to address the board on this item? Apparently not. The public hearing is closed. What is the pleasure of the board?
I'd like to move to deny the request of the water bill modification pursuant to staff's recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to deny the request for water bill modification. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Mm.
Mr. President.
Yes, Director Chuck.
I wonder if anyone from the staff could give recommendations here, because it was a tree root problem, which is obviously typical to Cambria. If they got any recommendations to users to avoid this in the future. I don't think I do.
Utilities Manager Brian Bode, any recommendations?
Besides moving to Torrance or something like that.
Well, things that happen underground are pretty difficult to plan ahead for. But I think that, you know, special circumstances on an individual that owns a home in Cambria and that's living there, that something like happened, we would consider it. But this circumstance here is it was used as a commercial vacation rental, and that makes a difference. But other than that, as far as, you know, I don't know how to check your lines. If you've got big trees sitting next to your meter and between the meter and the house, you might want to take a look at the roots and see your sewer or your water line will only be about a foot down to the house, and a big root can break it, and whether it's plastic or steel or whatever. So just take a look around your environment. Take a look from the meter to the house and see if there's any big trees in its path. That's the only recommendation I can make.
Thank you, Brian. Any other questions of Brian Bode?
President Sanders, may I make a comment for
yes,
the appellant that since there was conversation that took place, just to let the board know, she felt it was not something to appeal to the board, and the contractors really encouraged her to apply. They're new to the community, and she was really aware of tree roots being their responsibility. So she appreciates okay. being heard, but she also understood that.
Thank you. Next hearing is a hearing on parcels subject to fire hazard fuel reduction. Is there a staff report?
Yes, and I'm going to turn this over to Chief.
This does not include the administrative charges due to us, which go to the Cambria Fire Department and go back into the general fund for each lot cleared. This goes on the tax roll and gets attached to each property owner who has not cleared their lot. The board, you declared a public nuisance of all vegetation earlier this year, and they were all sent and mailed a notice that they had a deadline to clear that by. Because of the rains this year, we were lenient and rolled back the date by 2 weeks to give people more time to be compliant with removing the fire risk to the community. Unless there's other questions, I would recommend that you hold a public hearing and then move to approve this.
Any questions of the fire chief?
Not of the fire chief, but of Mr. Montandon.
Director Funky Blue, go ahead.
Art, I'm afraid that one of those 299 is one of mine. So I shouldn't vote on this, should I?
That's correct.
Okay.
Just for your information, if it's something that affects much larger portion of the lots in Cambria, it's appropriate for any of you to vote. But if it's a small number like this, I would recommend that you do not vote.
Thank you.
Let the record reflect that Director Funky Blue is recusing himself from this matter. Any other questions of the fire chief? This is a public hearing. The public hearing is open. Is there anybody who wishes to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, the public hearing is closed. What is the pleasure of the board?
I'd like to move that we approve and authorize the President to sign Resolution 51-2005 confirming the fire hazard fuel reduction itemized report and direct district staff to submit all appropriate and required documentation to the tax collector of the County of San Luis Obispo necessary to place the fire hazard fuel reduction charge on the tax roll. And I'd recommend a roll call vote.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
This does require a roll call vote. The clerk will call the roll.
Director Chaldicott?
Yes.
Director Coben?
Yes.
Director Villeneuve?
Yes.
Director Funky Ballou is recused. And President Sanders?
Yes. Motion passes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Director Chaldicott.
Yeah, could I just thank the chief for the work in this direction last year? I told him to step up overseeing of these lots, and you're going in the right direction. Thank you very much.
The next item on the agenda is a hearing to approve the appropriation limit for fiscal year 2005-2006. Is there a staff report?
There is, and I'll turn it over to Finance Officer Patrick Bradley.
Thank you. This is an annual housekeeping event. Okay. Essentially what it, and the district this year, we are $356,000 under the limit. What that means is that using a base year of 1978 and 79, which was the passage of the GAN limit, each year that limit is increased using a factor of population as well as per capita income. And it arrives at a number upon which we cannot receive more than that in terms of general fund property tax money. It was part of that whole GAN limit, which tried to put a cap on expended on revenues coming in to be used for general fund tax purposes. So the fact that we are $356,000, that means that the amount of property tax that we have received over the years compared to the buildup of this calculation means we're not over the limit. So that's essentially what it means.
So the finance officer?
I have one. Huh?
Yes, Director Chaldicott.
Just so I clarify, this is actually the money that we will receive from property tax as a district?
That is correct.
Okay.
And it's property tax money that we get from the county that comes to the district and essentially is used to fund any of our general fund activities, primarily the fire department, of course, but this building, PROS, street lighting, you know, just some of the ancillary type general fund activities that the district has.
And I guess is there any virtue in not asking for the money which were under the limit?
I wish there were.
In other words, could we ask for the full amount?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I wish we could.
I wonder if you could explain that, because to me, is that just because the calculation doesn't allow us to do?
It's also because that's what we actually receive. The calculation just sets the max that we can receive. So
oh,
if
okay.
we receive something less than that, that's fine. But this is what we're going to receive. We just can't receive more than the calculation will allow.
Okay, so if all the property values of this time went up, which is what they're doing, they still set the limit for the amount of money.
That's correct. Yeah, one of the reasons it's kind of creeping up is, and the reason our property tax revenue is creeping up, is the fact that as homes, well, you know what it's like on home values here.
The amount may change,
but
we don't change it.
That's correct.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions of the finance officer? Director Chaldicott.
Yeah, I'm listening to this. What I'm concerned is that as we become a higher rent district, people require the district to perform more functions. But in fact, that's not part of that calculation, is it?
You're absolutely correct. In fact, I went back and used 1988. I just happened to find some statistics from some numbers from 1988. And the increase in our property tax from 1988 to date has been 204%. The increase from 1998 to present of the general fund expenditures that the district has to spend in order to perform its general fund activities increased 490%. So your point is very valid. But that doesn't necessarily equate to the fact that that limit is going to increase. In fact, it does not mean that at all. It just means that the increase in our general fund activities, we have to find other ways of funding that. And that's why, for example, the fire benefit assessment is so critical to our operation.
So just quickly, you said the actual income has gone up by, was it 200%, but the actual needs have gone up by 400%?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound very good. Thank you.
Only in California. Any other questions of the finance officer? This is a public hearing. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to address the board on this matter? Seeing no one, the public hearing is closed. What is the pleasure of the board?
Okay, I'll take my turn. Recommend a conduct a public hearing to approve the appropriation limit for fiscal year 2005-2006 and adopt resolution 47-2005 setting the appropriation limit for fiscal year 2005-2006 and direct the finance officer to submit the resolution to the county auditor controller.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? Hearing none, motion carries. Next item on the agenda is consideration of adoption of Ordinance 05-2005 regarding the Veterans Memorial Building rules and regulations. Is there a staff report?
Yes, thank you. This is from a couple of months ago when we had some discussion and we had some public speakers about certain of the rules, and the two items that came out of that meeting that I promised to bring back in a couple of months' time frame was the fact that we would recommend amending, and in specificity, section 7.04.010 of our code, the Veterans Memorial Building rules and regulations that will prohibit use of the Vets Hall for private events or activities. And you'll note in your attached copy of the ordinance, and it's page 126, we recommend putting that in or slipping that in right after the first note section, the very first paragraph. That language, use for private events or activities, is prohibited. Relatedly, our user fee schedule has fees currently on it, and you'll see right on the back page of your staff report, I struck through social private event because I just don't want to have anything that's in controversy to, you know, any ordinance amendment. So we would actually strike those words, leave in the fact that there could be some potential commercial use that might be related to some public events. So I don't want to take that fee schedule out. And then the other item that was commented on about the general manager's discretion with regard to fee waivers for certain events that are youth-related, I proposed the language at the bottom of the fee schedule that shows that the general manager may waive or reduce fees for use of the Veterans Memorial Building facility by youth organizations for programs benefiting youth, programs sponsored by public agencies, and nonprofit public benefit programs. And that's the language I'm proposing to put on the fee schedule in order to comply with that particular concern. And that was it. Those two items were the only items.
Any questions of the general manager? Director Chaldicott?
Thank you, Mr. President. I had a couple of questions. I looked at the commercial use. Mm-hmm. I assume private would be typical of things like a wedding reception.
Yes, or birthday parties, quinceañeras, yeah. Anniversary parties.
But yet if I was in business to provide weddings, I could come under commercial.
That's a good point. You know, I want to be very upfront that there's probably several ways people can try to work around this, so we'll have to take this. But what I was mainly thinking about are commercial events that might benefit the whole public. Okay. So I wanted to be able to have that, and they're not a public agency. I wanted to be able to maintain that fee structure in place.
Yeah, I understand that. I just was concerned that the use would enable me to get around that. You
know. But a wedding or a party like that would more than likely be closed or private, and so that would...
The general manager. Director Coben, did you have a question? Go ahead.
Just redundantly was going to say that as long as everyone is welcome to participate, that's the key to
opening,
whether
public.
It's a commercial or a whatever.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't mention that the fiscal impact, just so we could bring this back, the records, and literally it has been less than $1,000 a year before we had this little moratorium in place for such private events. So it was very limited use by private parties.
Any other questions of the general manager? Would anybody here today like to address this issue? Seeing none, what is the pleasure of the board?
I'll move to adopt Ordinance 052005, amending Section 7.04.010 of the Veterans Memorial Building Rules and Regulations in Section F of Table 3.04.010, entitled CCSD, User Fees and Charges.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the recommended action. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The next item on the agenda is to consider Ordinance 06-2005 related to water conservation and retrofit program. Is there a staff report?
Yes, this came as a result of many of the realtors here in Cambria contacting board members and staff regarding a problem that exists when administering the retrofit requirement at the time of a sale of a rental property. We attached Art Montand and District Council assisted with this process and actually drafted the proposed ordinance, a sample of one of the letters written that talks about the various problems that is concerned with this particular amendment. They're requesting, or their position from the realtors, is that an amendment be created that requires retrofits at the time of the sale of the property, and that's how we approached it. It eliminates the requirement that the buyer provide proof of retrofit within 30 days of the close of escrow, because the seller and their agent have no control over the buyer after the close of escrow. The amendment proposed by the District Council does not eliminate this provision. Instead, the amendment requires the new owner to prove compliance with the retrofit requirements prior to the close of escrow. It is believed that this will accomplish the results requested by the realtors, and the proposed ordinance is on the back page of that staff report. Art, did you have anything to add? Or?
Well, I wanted to give some credit. Of course, that means the credit's due if this passes, but Director Chaldicott emailed me his suggested changes to the ordinance, which after I looked at everything, I agreed with wholeheartedly, and that's why it's incorporated the way it is. And I'll be happy to answer any questions regarding the ordinance. And attached as part of this report is the portion of our code that sets forth the ordinance as it currently reads and a few sections around that may be relevant to your consideration.
Any questions of the General Manager or District Council? Is there anyone here today who would like to be heard on this matter? Apparently not. What is the pleasure of the board?
I'll move and commend us for clearing up this little bit. I'll move that we amend District Code Chapter 4.16, Section 4.16.075, and which is the Water Conservation and Retrofit Program regarding retrofit requirements at the time of transfer of ownership.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the recommended action. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Motion carries with thanks to Director Chaldicott.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll now move on to regular business. Item 9A has been deleted. We had planned to have the district engineer's report at this time, but I don't see him here
we're
yet.
We're making contact with him. So
okay, so we'll move on to item 9B in the meantime, which is consideration of Pine Dorado parking on East-West Ranch property. Is there a staff report?
Yes, there is. I worked closely with District Counsel Art Montandon, who has attached his legal memorandum to the staff report. The recommendations are that the district is without any independent authority to grant the Lions Club its request to allow parking on the former Mid-State Bank property. The parking may be allowed with the consensus of North Coast SWAP, and that's the North Coast Small Wilderness Association. The negotiations could be started with North Coast SWAP and other stakeholders to amend the East-West Ranch Management Plan and relocate the designated parking area across on Highway 1, how it is currently noted, to the former Mid-State Bank property for future community parking. We did attach a color map to the back. Art may go into some further discussion so that he can lead you through his memorandum. And there is, of course, no fiscal impact to this report. Art?
Yes, thank you. I had an opportunity in the last month to look at the report, looking at the plan and the environmental impact. I believe it only would require amendment of the plan, not an amendment to any of the deeds and documents, as long as the plan is adopted by consensus.
Any questions of the General Manager or District Council?
Just
yes, Director Chaldicott.
You mentioned the access across the highway from the existing parking, but the plan is for signals to go in there, which would make that accessible, right?
If the signal is there, it would make it accessible, yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I guess just by level, the chances are that will be dry when the area we're talking about will be wet. So it might be available year-round if we keep things the way they are and somebody puts the lights in.
And I looked at the environmental impact report to find out whether there was any wetlands identified, and there are, and it's another exhibit to the easement and plan, but that is located off the area we're looking at for parking, so I don't think that would be a problem. there didn't seem to be any environmentally significant environmental impact to this particular site. It's called a grassland in most plans. And as I said in the document with the Mid-State Bank, it was actually referred to as an events meadow and has access off that parking lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, Director Coben.
Just to add the comment that the traffic light is a year or more away, so we should be aware of that, that there's the safety issue still exists in that period of time, although I hear what you're saying about the once the light is in and it's a reasonable parking spot.
And I'm just, this may be completely out of school, but there was talk at one time of putting access underneath the bridge by the creek also for a trail system that could also access back and forth without crossing the highway.
I think there are a significant number of constraints to accomplishing that, but nothing seems to be impossible if we really put our minds to it, I guess.
Well, also, if the parking lot is located there, it can be a multi-use parking lot, serve the farmer's market and other events that occur in town.
Any other questions of the general manager or district council? Art, can you maybe give the board and others here today a little primer in real property law? That is, the surface rights, even though the district is the fee owner of the property, the surface rights are not under the control of the district. Is that correct?
That's correct, because there's a conservation easement held by North Coast Swap, and the conservation easement incorporates the terms and conditions of the management plan. So that means that the conservation easement holder and the district has to comply with the plan and the terms of that conservation easement, which identifies only specific areas for parking and actually prohibits significant vehicular access anywhere else on the property.
So it's more than just a contract. There's actually an interest in the real property owned by the holder of the conservation easement. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. And though I didn't go back into all the grants and the documents where the money was obtained for acquisition of this property and other properties, it's my understanding that those grants had strings tied to them too, that if you didn't use those monies, when you use those monies to buy the property, it was subject to that the grant money would only be utilized for scenic byways and other things on this particular property, too. I think it was iced tea money.
And what is the process for amending the conservation easement and or management plan that would permit this use?
I believe the management plan, the conservation easement would not have to be amended, because it talks about designated parking areas, and that's where parking would be allowed. So what I would suggest is that the management plan be looked at and the parking area be identified in a different location, away from the creek and away from right an area of the highway that could be dangerous.
Okay. Any other questions of the general manager or district council? I have several requests to speak. And the first one is from Joellen Butler. Joellen? From North Coast Swap. Welcome.
Thanks. I have copies of what I'm going to say handed out to you in case you would like to refer to them.
I don't know
how to use
it. It's on?
It's
okay.
On. Thank you.
President Sanders and Board of Directors, thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of North Coast Swap and the East West Ranch. I'd like to start my presentation with their one-time exception. When the management plan and conservation easement was adopted on July 15, 2003, both the CCSD and North Coast Swap agreed to allow Pine Dorado parking on the property. With only a little over a month until the event, it did not seem fair to enforce this prohibition so suddenly. Vern Hamilton wrote a letter to the club allowing the one-time use and stating that it would not be allowed in the future. For Pine Dorado 2004, the CCSD provided parking on East Ranch in the portion that is to become the community park and will eventually have a designated parking area. The trolley provided shuttle service to the Pine Dorado grounds, and the pedestrian bridge to Main Street was opened early to allow people a shorter route to the parade and Pine Dorado grounds. There was no parking on the former Mid-State property that year. All the comments I heard about these arrangements were favorable, that is, until July of 2005 at the CCSD board meeting. The 2005 contract for the use of the Veterans Building and surrounding area was negotiated between Tammy Rudock, the general manager, and members of the Lions Club in December of 2004. At that time, the club was told there would be no parking at the Mid-State portion of the ranch. A letter from Ms. Rudock to the Lions sent in February of 2005 confirmed this. The Lions were to respond if the terms were not agreed to, and they did not respond. The Mid-State area being a wetland or floodplain is a side issue at this point, but if it can be proved that this is a wetland area, it is against the Coastal Act to park on it. The idea that someone could get hurt parking and crossing Highway 1 is a real concern, but at most of the past Pine Dorado events, people have parked on the highway, even when parking was allowed at the Mid-State Bank parking area. This should have no bearing on whether or not to uphold the conservation easement on the property. The conservation easement is a signed legal document on file with the county recorder, which protects the East-West Ranch now and forever. It cannot be changed without a lengthy public process and without the agreement of the CCSD, North Coast Swap, the American Land Conservancy, and the California Coastal Conservancy. It is not a document to be changed for a one-time use. For any party to break this agreement is illegal under California law. Although North Coast Swap respects and supports the Lions Club in their efforts on behalf of the community, we must uphold the conservation easement. It is our legal and community responsibility and the main purpose of North Coast Swap as the conservation easement holder. This is not a matter of CCSD versus North Coast Swap versus the Lions Club. It's about keeping our promises to the public and the agencies who purchased and intended the East-West Ranch to be protected in perpetuity. I've looked at the staff recommendations and Art Montandon's report, and on staff recommendation one, the sections of the management plan, Chapter 9, Section H, Paragraph 1, and Exhibit E, Permitted Uses, Paragraph 4 of Regulated Uses, cited by Mr. Montandon, makes permitting allowances for groups of people, not cars. Allowing vehicles on the ranch is specifically limited to authorized maintenance and emergency vehicles in Exhibit E of the management plan. All other motorized vehicles are prohibited in Exhibit F of the plan. I was part of the committee that crafted the conservation easement and the management plan, and the intention was to make sure that no cars were on the ranch property that were not absolutely necessary for ranch activities. Section 3.1 of the conservation easement allows for concurrence for certain permitted activities, but the section cited as the most applicable provision is for development of areas to facilitate the gathering of more than 25 people on the ranch, not cars, and it's also about development, not one-time use. So although it may be most applicable, it does not really apply to this situation. This section also requires at least 45 days notice to North Coast Swap in order to allow our board to go over all the ins and outs of the proposed use, hold our regular public meeting, take a vote of our board, and respond. In other words, it gives North Coast Swap time to make a responsible decision based on all the facts, not just an on-the-spot decision. Based on what I've just said, we cannot agree to staff recommendation one. To agree would mean that we would give permission for a violation of the conservation easement, which we cannot do. Staff recommendation number two. North Coast Swap would consider meeting with all of the other stakeholders to talk about what would be required to amend the easement and to talk about exactly what the amendment might be. As I stated earlier, we are not in favor of just changes, if any, should also go through the open public process, just as the original document did. We cannot agree at this time to negotiating an amendment to the easement to relocate the designated parking area without further study of the issue and possible alternatives. And I heard what Art said about amending the management plan instead of the easement. The two are really closely tied, and we would have to look at this further to see if we could just go along with amending the management plan and not the conservation easement, because I don't really know about that now. I just got this report yesterday morning, and this is the best I could do.
Okay.
Do you have any questions for me?
Any questions of Joellen Butler? Thank you.
Okay, Joellen. Thank you.
The next speaker will be Norman Palmer. And Norm will be followed by John Holland.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the board, Norman Palmer, President, Cambria Lions Club. We were quite pleased with Council's report to the board. I would like to state that the two notifications that were supposed to have been given to the Lions Club, each was given to a Pine Dorado chairman. The Lions Club board of directors and the presidents have never been informed of this prior to the time I brought it up and came here. I did not ask for a one-time exemption. I asked for an exemption to use the property. I think the plan should be amended and that we should be able to use it on an annual basis. As to the mention again of a wetland, I want to point out to the board that in 2002, the Coastal Commission all the way down issued a permit to Mid-State Bank to build that building. The process of the building of that building, they excavated up to 8 feet of soil from the entire surface of the property. So if there was ever any wetland there, it's not there now. We ask your cooperation, and we hope that North Coast Swap will cooperate with us in changing the plan so that we can use this property. Thank you.
Thank you, Norm. John Holland, followed by Jeff Stump. Please use the microphone, John. Thank you.
My name is John Holland. I'm a resident of Cambria and a Lion. It probably, if you don't have the authority to make any changes, what I have to say probably doesn't count for much, but it seems to me that policies that don't have some rationale and reasoning behind them, in other words, an explanation of how parking on that property would hurt somebody or something, there's something wrong with that, and it's upsetting to think that we always fall back on everything that I've read and heard, always fall back, well, it's the policy or it's the law. That isn't the reason. There needs to be a reason why we shouldn't park there in addition to whatever the law or the policy is. I just feel very unsatisfied with the way we're being, the Pine Rock group is being dealt with in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Jeff Stump, followed by Mickey Burton.
Good afternoon, Mr. President, members of the board. My name is Jeff Stump. I'm vice president with the American Land Conservancy. I was the project manager for the East-West Ranch acquisition. And I'm very happy to be here today because what I see here is the process working that we put a lot of thought into, the folks in the community, members of the board at the time, members of the board who approved the management plan and the easement. North Coast American Land Conservancy, I'm basically here to lend my support to NC Swap. They're a very important component of this. In being able to put the land into public ownership, give it to the CCSD for management, an important part of that is that easement, which will protect it. Part of the checks and balances that we established, part of the part of the problem and one of the issues with the community is that they're afraid of state ownership because of folks in Sacramento making decisions. So we chose local ownership with an easement. We appreciate the staff's recommendation not to approve the parking. I don't think of any amendment to that. We'd be happy to come back, sit at the table as an active partner to try and work through this issue. But with all of the different alternatives that have been proposed and that have been have shown success over the last year, with the upcoming traffic stop next year, I don't think that opening up a lengthy amendment process to the management plan is a wise course of action. You probably wouldn't be finished before the issue is resolved. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, and I appreciate the efforts of staff on this.
Could we ask Jeff a question?
A question.
Director, you mentioned a Heritage Foundation or something.
Oh, sorry. Natural Heritage Tax Credit Act,
okay,
which basically allowed Mid-State Bank to take a tax credit in exchange for donating the property to the American Land Conservancy. That dollar value of the donation allowed us to achieve the matching grant that we needed to bring in the Coastal Conservancy's $3.5 million. So all these things are tied. The tax grant, that donation, the match to the Coastal Conservancy's money. If we start to unravel that, I think this whole thing could unravel very quickly, and I don't think anyone in this community wants that to happen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Mickey Burton, followed by Bernie Grossman.
Board of Directors, Mr. President. Firstly, I'd like to say I hope that you would vote to uphold the conservation easement and the management plan. Most of us in this room and most of you directors have been involved in protecting the ranch. I think Director Billy for at least 20 years. I worked with Director Colvin on the events committee. The plan works, and there's no need to tamper with it. As far as suddenly out of the woodwork having to take the Mid-State Bank land, which has always been designated as a meadow, riparian land, and a wetland, and turn it into a large community parking lot seems ridiculous. There was never a parking lot of any size imagined on the west side of the highway to begin with. That was supposed to be a small staging area. This is the newspaper from when the Mid-State Bank gave us the money, the land, which was to represent the money for the matching funds. And it calls it meadow land and riparian land. Now, I'm not a wildlife biologist. I'm not a wetland biologist, and neither is Mr. Bomber of the Lions Club. There were many, many studies done on the Mid-State Bank. They had 21 acres of land. They wanted to build a big development. They were allowed to build a bank on 2 acres. 16 acres went to the ranch, the East-West Ranch. 3 acres are located on the other side of the highway, and that's to be the small little lot that's ever needed. So why suddenly everybody has forgotten this is beyond me. So one day when tourists and locals drive into town heading north on Highway 1, and as they approach the new signal that will be at Cambridge Drive, they will look over to the right and see a meadow. Through it will be a meandering path. There will be wildflowers. There are already willow trees, and there are some poppies down there. There will be migratory birds. All this is already in the plan, the East-West Ranch Management Plan. There are maps that show the path. There's a wetland there. So I would ask that you, everybody, read the plan. It's on the CCSD website. It reads, you know, like a novel. It's simple to read. There are no lengthy, hard legal terms. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Bernie Grossman, followed by Lynn Christie.
Thank you. My name is Bernie Grossman. I was president of the Lions during the period of July 1st 2002 to June 30th of 2004 and was never invited to any discussions of the parking area at Midstate Bank. Now, North Coast Swap, as stewards of the East West Ranch, needs to remember that the community donated approximately $1 million and are directly affected by the lack of use. The lack of the parking reduces visitors to the Pine Dorado Days, which equals loss of revenues to the various Lion-donated organizations and to the businesses of Cambria. Thank you.
Thank you. Lynn Christie, followed by Beatrice.
Donation of $1 million to buy the ranch, and it was the last one. It was the last one that put us over the top. Director Colvin remembers that one. And the community raised $1 million from special events and donations from all over the country and the nation and several foreign countries. That makes $5 million of the $11 million purchase price. The other $6 million dispersed by the California Coastal Conservancy and other agencies came from the taxpayers of California who passed the conservation bonds, Props 12 and 13. So the ranch is not our personal kingdom, fiefdom. It's our responsibility to protect it and the conservation easement. But the ranch belongs to the people of California, the largest investors.
Thank you. B. Morrow, followed by, and you'll have to excuse me, I'm having trouble reading the handwriting. It's Donald, and it looks to be like Archer. Okay.
Good afternoon. Thank you for letting me speak today. First, I would like to say that I admire the Lions Club immensely, as all the community does. However, my concern is with this proposition that it's becoming kind of a tendency for the CCSD to set a precedent about taking environmental easements. And this is my big concern. The environmental easements, as the last speaker said, belong to the community, and not only the community, the state. And it's very, very disconcerting to see environmental easements being kind of chopped away if they can, if you can find a way around them. So my biggest concern as an environmental environmentalist is to keep the easements intact, not to chop away at them, because this precedent, if set, can go in the years to come and come back and haunt our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Bea. And the final speaker will be Donald Archer.
Thank you. Sorry about my handwriting.
Oh, that's okay. Better than mine.
I should have a better excuse. I'm a painter. Anyway, as honorable as Lions Club causes are, this is not about service organizations or charitable fundraising. It's about, as far as I'm concerned, it's about setting a terrible precedent and sending the wrong message. It really comes down to three things as I see it. The first is that it's an unnecessary precedent. This is about convenient amusement parking, not about hiking through the forest and so on. And it's not even about water tanks, essential for providing protection to the community and the forest. Secondly, there's alternative parking available at the Rodeo Grounds and elsewhere. And finally, if this easement is overridden, it would appear that it's almost a CCSD mission to ignore and undermine conservation easement agreements. Secondly, it's a bad precedent. It's about trust. Many of us have donated money, time, and in my case, artwork, in order to preserve Cambria's beauty and open space. This type of action makes a mockery of that effort and will discourage, and I think this should be remembered, it will discourage future participation and donations. It's saying that a conservation easement isn't worth the paper it's written on. And finally, it's a destructive precedent. Of all things to override a conservation easement, automobile parking has to be the worst. I mean, it reminds me of Joni Mitchell's song, Paved Paradise and Put Up a Parking Lot. Although it's not paved, I know. Motorized vehicles are among the most, if not the most, glaring and invasive problem facing the environment. Cars crush habitat and leak oil and other contaminants. Concentrated crowds of people as well as automobile tires negatively impact the wetland area. The obvious visibility of such parking on dedicated preserved land absolutely sends the wrong message. If fundraising and convenience is the issue, why can't the Lions Club provide shuttles, in addition to the community trolley, from designated parking areas, as has been done on hospitality night? If fundraising is the issue, donations could be requested in exchange for this service. For those who are willing and able to walk from designated parking areas, it's good exercise and puts them in contact with each other and the wonderful open space. Thank you.
Thank you. Board members?
I'd like to...
Go ahead. Director Funk.
First you said board members, and he said...
Any comments? Oh, yeah.
I'd like to move...
...is parking is okay, and then parking would be permitted, and I think the issue is considerably more complex than that.
I agree.
I think the word consensus brings more than okay. It means that there's a lot of discussion to come to consensus. You don't just say okay.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear, though, that if parking was to be allowed, at a minimum, the management plan would have to be amended, and perhaps the conservation easement itself would have to be amended, which is a rather daunting process. Director Villeneuve.
Yeah, absolutely. I reject the whole idea of trying to modify the conservation plan. That took after the money was obtained. The management plan, along with the with the hiring of a very very competent firm to help draft that the conditions for the conservation easement, it's a working document, and to start tinkering with it, and particularly for something as frivolous as the it isn't frivolous, it's just that a once a year the use of that land, changing the conservation easement, opens up opportunities for any number of other worthwhile, possibly, but certainly it would weaken the resolve. And I have to keep in mind, and Jeff Stump just put it, I think put it in the dollar amounts, the major amount of the financing that took to purchase this property did not come from the population. Even the $1 million that was accumulated, if you look at the donors, a great number of those were outside of the community. That is, this is not a Cambria project. This was the combination of a number of very powerful allies. Otherwise, we would see the complete development of that, particularly the West Ranch. So I don't think that's there's an old saying, you know, I used it just, I think, the last meeting. If it ain't broke, don't try to fix it.
Yes, Director Coben.
Just add the comment that I appreciate Jeff Stump from the American Lands Conservancy reminding us not so much the money or even the time or the work, but that there's a possibility that the whole thing could dissolve if we're, at which it'd end up with none of us owning the land, none of the community, none of the people in the state as now. The point is that most of the money did come from the people of the state of California, and we need to adhere to that notion that this is a place for everybody in California and in the country to come to. Thanks.
Director Chaldicott?
Yes, thank you. I think that my comment was because I think there is an oversimplification in the recommendation, which I think may confuse people. If we were possibly to add in after the end of the sentence with the consensus of North Coast Swap and underlying easement holders or something like that, then we'd know it's not. What I was trying to get away from is it looks like if we give North Coast Swap and they roll over, then everything's okay, which is not true.
Would the maker of the motion agree to that amendment?
Sure.
Fine. Director Coben?
Was that second sentence part of your motion, or was it just the first sentence? Parking may be allowed. Was it the first sentence?
You know,
it's been so long he forgot.
No, I was going to say, as a client told me yesterday, whatever, you know.
Okay. I think
let's just get it done and move on.
I think we understand the thrust of the motion. Before we vote, I'd like to say just one thing. There's two sides to this coin. The flip side of the coin is that Pine Dorado has been an activity in this town for so many years that it's part of the culture of the town. And I would like to see the staff work with the Lions Club and, to the maximum extent possible, work on alternatives here that make sense so that the tourists that are coming in and even local residents who choose to drive to Pine Dorado have a viable alternative.
If I can comment on that, they did
sure.
use the East Ranch last year. They coordinated with Ben Bohr. It went very well as far as I know and what was reported to me. I rode the trolley. We actually coordinated the trolley to make stops along the way and specifically at the pedestrian crossway so that people could park there and just walk straight over the
Water storage, water master plan, and desalination facilities.
How about a break?
I've been asked if we can take a break. Any objection to that? We'll take a break until 2:15. Thank you. The dais? Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats.
This one here, she actually had on her other one a note about talking about it's more legal matters, and so she put one in for here, but if you feel she needs to go to the, you know, the end, I may have misdirected her, but...
Okay.
We were talking about Pine Knolls. I wasn't sure if you were going to split it out today and say legal matters or separate matter.
Okay. All right. We'll figure
Don't
it out.
Don't want her mad at you because it's something I did.
No problem. Yeah, because she's also here.
Yes, because she had it on there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Director Coben? Meeting will come back to order. We're back on the substitute matter for item 9A, which is a report on water and wastewater facilities. And we have our district engineer, Bob Gressens, to give us a report. Bob?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. I do have a PowerPoint presentation to cover the first item on my the staff report that covers the Pine Knolls tank. So with Carlos's assistance, we'll go through those slides rather than just go by the text. It's pretty much a rehash of what's in the written report with a little more detail.
Okay.
Go ahead, Carlos, next slide. What I'll describe, and feel free to interrupt me at any point if there's a question, I will go through the chronology of the project. I'll review the layouts, some of the key layouts. I got some closing remarks on it, and then also pause for some questions at the end if there still are some questions. Next slide, please. Just to go through the chronology over the last few years on this project, in October 2004 is when we received our emergency permit from the county, and we thought we had a project to start at that point. The Coastal Commission stepped in, issued a cease and desist order on October 8th of 2004, and then we had a series of workshops and conversations with the coastal staff to try to address their concerns from roughly the December to January 2005 time frame. We did two fairly significant redesigns to develop to try to address their concerns, which was mainly the reducing the footprint in the northeastern expansion area on the site. In January 2005, we received hand-drawn sketches provided by the Coastal Commission staff. They implied some very major redesigns in what they're proposing on those sketches. We had to analyze those. We found out that quite a few of them were not engineered properly. They were not drawn to scale and so forth. Did not fit the site as they indicated. Next slide. In April 2005, we went to the...
Bob, can I hold you up right there?
Sure.
Can you go back to the previous slide for a moment?
Okay. Can we go back, Carlos? Oh, thank you. Okay.
Much has been made about the amount of money that the district has spent on consulting engineering services in order to get this project through the Coastal Commission process. Can you explain how that relates to the workshops and conferences with the coastal staff, the redesigns that they requested, the hand-drawn sketches that they prepared, getting their information about water tanks off the internet, having
workshops that would take 4 hours to 8 hours at a crack to explain. There's travel time to different offices to go back with the consultant and so forth. And then just totally redesigning. There's a lot of details that go into a design that may not be apparent to a planner or to a layperson, that an engineer who's going to put their reputation on the line and sign off on a drawing has to consider. You know, there's details on how many inches there are to turning a pipe corner, to having enough room for things to move during an earthquake, to make sure the foundation is designed properly. So all these things get rehashed whenever there's a proposal to change a design like that. So you just can't take it at face value. They have to be analyzed. And Boyle, throughout the whole process, stuck with us on this and assisted us throughout in answering these questions.
Maybe it would be prudent to have the fire chief chime in here, too, on the fire access issues and the expenses that we incurred convincing the Coastal Commission staff that adequate fire access was required. Chief?
Sure. I'd be glad to cover that. The again, one of the disadvantages that Coastal Commission staff is on is that they are not engineers. They do not have a fire protection background. They do not have a public safety educational background. They don't have a fire behavior background, and they often don't understand the threat that this forest is under from the community around it, or that the threat that the community is under with the forest around it. That there, we are commingled. We are basically, we live within each other's realm. And it was very difficult to educate the staff what kind of fire access was needed in there, not only to protect the forest that is around the northeast side of Cambria, but also to protect the residences and the property that's around that area as well. Even when presented with the California Fire Code, which we had to provide copies of, they don't have any copies of both state and regular publications. And even though it was in black and white, it took a lot of laborious time to go over and explain to them why fire access was needed. And we even had to go out and measure and provide turning radiuses for fire apparatus because they questioned the state fire code the Uniform Fire Code, and even the California Department of Forestry's requirements for turnarounds for vehicles. So this spent a lot of staff time, a lot of my time, and a lot of my fellow department head members here to convince them in manners that other public safety agencies and other governmental agencies take at face value. There's no benefit to us to making a fire road bigger than it needs to be.
Thank you. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Next slide, Carlos. In April 2005, we did have our first hearing in front of the full Coastal Commission. It was really to cover whether it was a substantial issue by their terminology. We presented our design revision for at this point, and that particular design was two steel tanks. We had moved to allow the area to be reduced down to 6,100 square feet in the north eastern expansion area from the original approved emergency permitted 9,115 feet square foot area. We also offered further mitigation beyond the mitigations and that were in the environmental document on the project, which I believe was approved in July 2004, if my memory serves me right, and that was to offer property at the Lamert tank site as a further offset because of the concerns over that northeastern expansion area. And that was contiguous with the same Monterey pine forest habitat. In fact, it had probably more mature trees in that property than what the issue was over the concerned area at the Pine Knolls tank. We also attempted to show how the expansion area was outside of the actual mapped ESHA and had been impacted in the past by prior activities. The commission didn't agree with that, and they determined it was a substantial issue at the close of that hearing item and scheduled it for their next meeting for the full hearing. So next slide. Then in June 2005, we went to the Coastal Commission hearing on the project. The commission staff at that meeting made a presentation that disputed sizing criteria. By that point, between, I guess, April and June, they had hired an outside consulting engineer. Some of his work implied that a three-tank project would better fit on the existing site, but he did not follow the fire access road design criteria
that the district created in order to try and convince the Coastal Commission staff that there was an approvable project here, but it's reacting to the alternatives that the Coastal Commission staff itself was creating, none of which were grounded in any civil engineering. They were simply circles drawn on a map and really nothing more. Bob, can you characterize the level of expertise of the consulting engineer hired by the Coastal Commission staff? Can you give the folks here and those who will be watching the tape a flavor for his experience in designing water storage facilities?
Well, I would say that in the report that he provided, it was very preliminary in nature. We know that he did not visit Cambria or go to the tank site to actually see the constraints. For example, there's a need for a PG&E easement across the site because we intercept overhead power lines towards the back part of our existing site with the new tank, so we have to underground the lines, and that requires a PG&E easement. So that wasn't really considered in the layout, nor was some of the topographic constraints for a retaining wall and so forth, as I recall. On background, I know there was a couple of smaller tank projects mentioned. I don't believe he was a licensed civil engineer or structural engineer. So speaking on foundation design, he would have to refer to a structural engineer for that type of work.
Yet, despite the fact that he's not a licensed structural engineer, he was opining on structural engineering matters. Isn't that right?
I think on one occasion when we had a meeting in the Santa Cruz office, there was some discussion on foundation design that I know Boyle's structural engineer was more qualified to address, and I think it also came up in some of the discussions before the June hearing.
And I recall at one point he advised the Coastal Commission staff that an alternative for the district would be to place one of the storage tanks at the new elementary school site. And in a telephone conference with him, having never visited Cambria, he didn't realize that the school is as far away from the Pine Knolls tank site as it is, and then admitted that the two tanks should be no further than 500 feet apart. Isn't that right?
I can't recall the 500-foot conversation in the past. I know there...
But the gist of it is the school site will not work as an alternative.
Correct.
And we spent money with our engineering consultant having to demonstrate to the Coastal Commission staff that that alternative would not work.
Right. We were responding to a number of questions and kind of conjectural type
and had
points
that,
being made.
Had that civil engineer bothered to visit Cambria and look at the physical layout of things, he would have quickly come to the conclusion that the school site wouldn't work.
Yeah, I gathered it was a preliminary type of report, a very limited budget. That's my opinion, to do, to get into a great deal of detail.
What do you, given your, how long have you been an engineer?
29 years.
Okay, give me an idea of how much that engineer would have billed the Coastal Commission for his work on the Cambria project, roughly.
My guess would be somewhere in the maybe 10,000 to say 20,000 range. So, you know, that would be my rough guess.
And now I'd like, Director Coben's talked about it, Mr. Sanders has talked about it, about costs and money. Can you just give me how much money the people of Cambria have spent to react like a bumper pool, like a cue ball? How much money we have spent to satisfy these reactions, these quasi-engineering reactions of planners at the Coastal Commission? How much money have we spent to satisfy them and try to resolve this issue that we as a people think is critical to our health and safety and to our forests' health and safety? How much money have we spent?
I can answer that question.
Okay, thank you.
I have the spreadsheet here. With Boyle Engineering, now understand that this number includes all of our designs too. It seems like maybe they've been here another time, but we primarily try to take it up there in order to meet specific deadlines or try to expedite the matter. We volunteer to go up there so that we could get this project moving.
Well, I had the personal impression when we had a site visit that the coastal staff, there's one or two people on the staff that were actually walking around and looking at whoever we'd laid out with the boundaries of the proposed site. The rest of them were all cuddled up in a corner somewhere talking to one another, and I never saw them looking, following our engineer and our staff when they're giving the presentation, which didn't impress me a great deal that they had much interest in the information we had to provide.
Go ahead, Bob.
Moving on, I'm trying to think of a more accurate answer for Director Funky Blue. It wouldn't surprise me. I don't have the numbers in my head, but I wouldn't surprise me if half of that $400,000 was result of going back and forth on this thing. We'd have to confirm that, maybe even more. In July, just going back to chronology, July 2005. The CCSD and the Coastal Commission staff met on the project. At that point in the meeting, we showed, and we were looking at the approval conditions from their June commission meeting. And we showed them what would happen with the three-tank design that they implied would work
if you applied the proper design standards to the emergency access road. And I'll have a sketch that shows that in a minute. And we also, again, trying to appease their requirements, we came up with a design revision 4A, which was the fifth design revision. And this was two steel tanks, downsized some, but also the use of an interim tank so we can get around some construction constraints that allowed us to build one tank on top of the footprint of an existing tank. And that added about, that needs to be negotiated yet, but my rough estimate is around $75,000 to $100,000 in additional project costs as a result of that. It saves about 3,200 square feet, so we're down to about 2,900 square feet in that expansion area. And just looking at from an engineering standpoint, you look at the value of the 3,200 square feet for the added cost of the project, then that's on a per acre value, it's about $1 million to $1.3 million per acre, and that compares to the appraised value of the original area of $3,000. So you can see we're making a considerable concession to try to, you know, further reduce that footprint, but it still has to go out into the expansion area some. Next slide, please.
Bob, while you're at this point, in your professional judgment and in the professional judgment of Boyle Engineering Company, is there any alternative location for these tanks?
In my opinion, that they are where they need to go. That's where the distribution system was laid out to begin with. There's a good turnover rate at that point, meaning that the water stays fresher, as well as just the hydraulics, the location on that elevation.
And the way all of the infrastructure in Cambria has been built over the years, relying on the Pine Knoll site as the central distribution system for the water system. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
So if we went to an alternative location, we'd have to start tearing up all kinds of pipes and other infrastructure in order to relocate the central distribution system for water in this town. Isn't that right? That's correct. Okay.
Just back to chronology, and this past month and this month of August, the commission staff did send us a letter. They agreed to approve design revision 4A. They added more conditions, more recommended changes in order to allow them to recommend approval. One was to reduce the PG&E easement another foot from 10 feet to 9 feet. One was to reduce a maintenance access area behind tank number 2 from 12 feet down to about 8 feet. Then to further reduce the diameter of the two tanks from 54 feet to 52 feet. Our major concern with that was the latter point. By reducing that diameter, we came down to a storage volume from 934,000 gallons to about 860,000 gallons. And as a result of that, they came back to us and said they would allow the tank to go up another 2.2 feet to make up for that shortfall. So increase the vertical dimension of the tank as opposed to going back to the diameter that we showed them, the 54 feet.
So by raising the height 2.2 feet, we get back to 934,000 gallons. Is that right?
That's correct. Uh-huh.
Okay. And Bob, can you explain?
According to, and I'm going to have to refer to Tammy's memory on this, because I know it definitely came up in our June or our July 8th meeting, but Tammy recalls otherwise.
I remember it back in December because, remember, we were going through this educational process because they mostly have planning backgrounds or planning professionals, and I remember that question coming up because it's always been referred to as dead water or dead storage.
Just for the benefit of those here today and those who will be viewing the tape, the dead storage issue relates to where the pipe in the bottom of the tank goes in order for water to leave the tank and go out into the distribution system, and that that pipe is at the side of the tank. If the volume of water in the tank goes below that outlet, then air gets into the system and we can have a serious problem in terms of breaking pipes and mains in our infrastructure. So between the very bottom of the tank and the top of that outlet pipe, that is considered dead storage. The Coastal Commission staff was advised of that without consulting with their consulting engineer. They unilaterally decided that we could have a tank size that is 2 feet less in diameter. So we had to go to Boyle Engineering again. We had to get Boyle Engineering to give the Coastal Commission staff the data necessary in order to convince the staff that the 934,000 gallon approved gallonage limitation approved by the Coastal Commission could not be met by downsizing the tanks 2 feet in diameter.
This whole, you know, when you look at this issue from day one, the interrelationship between state government and local government, it's a 101 text on how the state forces the local folks to carry the financial burden of their political mandate, whatever it is, and it's outrageous. Brian, this concept of dead volume, I think you were the one who first taught me about that. What happens when pipes suck air? I think that was, isn't that the expression that water professionals use? Yes, I mean, but I like sucking air better because dead volume doesn't mean anything. But sucking air, I think I can picture. Tell if you can in your you know, Greg is a lawyer. He's too nice. Tell me as a water professional, what happens when pipes begin to suck air?
Well, before that, the dead space in the bottom is actually the water before it even gets to the outlet, about 2 feet above the outlet, can start vortexing air. Just like when you pull the plug on your sink or your bathtub, you'll see a spiral go down inside down the plug hole. It's sucking air in there, and that's vortexing. If air gets into a water system like that, it'll hammer inside the pipes to the point that you can actually break the pipes, bust them loose. You'll stir up sediment that's in the pipes. Also, that dead space is in there for sediment that's in the tanks. I mean, there's water, there's sand, salt, silt, that type of stuff in the water. And you let that settle down the bottom, and you clean the tanks periodically with divers or whatever. And that's what that dead space is for, so that material isn't carried into the pipes and into the homes and water heaters and that type of thing. But air hammer and pipes can be just lethal to pipes. It can break them up. It can break water heaters, damage houses, you name it.
Could I also comment
Coben,
in?
Sure. So
in addition to the technology issue, I believe you told us that we could indeed go up the 2 feet, but that again increases the cost of the basis, the foundation. In order to go up, our expense of building these tanks is increased. Is that correct? Isn't that correct?
It does affect the foundation, and we had Boyle look at that initially. They know it's going to change some of the dimensions on the foundation, the amount of concrete at the bottom, because the center of gravity is slightly higher when you do that. Typically, you want a kind of a squatter tank for the seismic design as opposed to a narrow, tall tank, because the center of gravity is just like driving an RV around a sharp curve on Highway 1 versus a nice sports car. You know, you want kind of low center of gravity because you have that force that comes sideways during an earthquake.
Not a casual thing to just go up two more feet for any frivolous reason. It's going to cost us in safety and design. And
the devil's in the details. You have to always look at the details before you just make a change.
Apparently not to the state of California and its agencies.
And may I add a comment that at the July meeting, their engineer is of record agreeing that at that time the current height of our tanks and width of our tanks met engineering standards. And so that's one example of how the way that this staff took into serious consideration, could we make it work on the construction site? Could we do? I'm just telling you that we have been extremely flexible. We have argued back and forth, and that some of the discussions were healthy, some maybe not so healthy. But at the same time, we haven't tried to naturally enter the conversations to be arbitrary. But it's been very challenging, to say the least, that any time we've gotten finished with a meeting, we'll get one of these letters or one of these phone calls suggesting that we get some more questions to answer or some other diagram to look at.
And putting the temporary storage tank out in the wooded area would entail cutting down trees, clearing land, clearing construction access to it, and the district has informed the Coastal Commission that instead of doing that, the temporary tank will go on district-owned property, but it will add a considerable expense to the construction cost.
Not to mention a tiny bit of a construction burden in that they're going to have to work around it when they're building that back tank.
Right.
Next slide, please, Carlos. This just illustrates the three-tank concept when it's laid out according to the fire access road standards that we have to abide by. And the... in doing so,
and
this is cross-hatched area. This
Bob, just to interrupt you, some prefacing remarks here. This is an alternative that was suggested by the Coastal Commission staff.
That's correct. This alternative was mentioned in their engineer's report and by Coastal staff as fitting on the existing site, which is shown sort of a square shape here. That's our property line there that has sort of the white fill to it. But what didn't occur at that point was looking at the turning radiuses that are required for the emergency access equipment. I know Chief Putney has mutual aid agreements in place with other fire departments, so any type of equipment is likely to respond to a major conflagration in the woods there. They need to have a turnaround at the end so they can escape a fire if it gets out of control. So if they have a fire truck back there, they want it pointed out towards the road. It would be a very difficult multiple-turn backup maneuver. They had much sharper radiuses shown on their earlier sketches. So this was just to show them that even if we use the three-tank arrangement with the reduced volume, we were requiring at least around 6,600 square feet, which is that cross-hatched area, out in the northeastern expansion area. And we also showed the easement requirement in that sketch. The tanks, two of the tanks would have been about 5 feet off the property line here, and then another one off in the northeast area here. Next slide, please.
Wait. I just want to make sure, that the public, because I get these questions a lot, I want to make sure the public understands the methodology and how this works, the dynamics between the Coastal Commission and Cambria. And the way it works is, I think as Tammy said, there's discussions, sometimes constructive, sometimes not so constructive, but they have discussions between staff of the Coastal Commission and staff of Cambria. And then we have disagreements, and then staff gives orders, do a three-tank design, and then our staff says, no, we can't do it, and it's basically tough, so then we have to go out and hire Boyle to at our expense and show them that they're wrong. It's not like they go out. We paid for this drawing, for this engineering work, didn't we?
That's absolutely correct.
When they gave us their opinion that this could be done, and we said no, the only way to resolve that log jam is for us to spend the money and show them from an engineering perspective that they're wrong. Isn't that the way it goes down?
That's right. We had to do a preliminary design on their design using the correct standards.
And that's been the methodology pretty much since October of 2004.
That's absolutely correct. If you'll note on this, and thank you for bringing that up, you'll note at the top how it says revised future needs alternative. That's because we did it. We got a drawing that we knew was not going to work because we could tell. If you notice in the middle of that drawing, the particular instance here was the fire access road. Now, we all know what our fire trucks look like here, and you know where the current fire access road is down on the bottom half of our property, a straight line back. This was an expectation of staff that because the widths were okay with the fire vehicles and the equipment that Chief Putney provided that might go into the woods at some point, that they could meander around and through the tanks and all the exterior piping and back up into this site to have to fight a fire or make a rescue attempt. So it's these kinds of things, and we wanted, as your staff, and to represent...
Someone is pulling some strings up in Sacramento or wherever, and they're doing this consciously to drain our resources to the point that I've become totally frustrated. And it's self-evident what they're doing. Someone is, or some bodies, maybe plural, is playing this game just to drain us. And I think people in this community need to be aware of this. Forget about all the Escher versus growth and all this. That's a separate issue. But to me, this is the real issue. And I'm very grateful that you've done this and taken the time to show us what we know, but the public. So thank you, Bob. And thank you, Tammy.
And the other thing, if I may just add on before the other directors speak, not only was there a challenge to the field of experience or expertise of our backgrounds professionally, which we always tried never to do that to their staff, is the fact that we had to prove it. We had to go to the fire code. At one point, literally, we were asked to lend them our fire code. And I told them that would be impossible to do. Our fire department uses that every day for operations. And so we had to refer them to some sort of resource library so they could get it. I mean, even making the copies of the pages from the relevant fire code at some points were not sufficient because there may have been some discretion that based upon our local topography and our terrain, our chief can make by the fire code. But there was always a difference in opinion or variation in how it could be interpreted.
Well, I'm just grateful that they accepted our fire code.
It's actually the state's fire code.
We had the top fire person in the state come to testify on our behalf. It wasn't, you know, yes, we believe Bob knows everything he needs to know, but we went beyond and brought the person at the state level and gave his comments and testified that what we had wanted was the correct one. Right? Bob's nodding.
It apparently went in one ear and out the other. Didn't make any influence or effect.
Before we move on, there was a price penalty for the third tank, which I think started at $400,000.
Yeah,
that was without inflation.
Freelon, I think mostly what they've been dealing in the frustration is not the commission itself, it's the staff that we've been working with. Now, I don't know what the connection and how much they report to the commission itself, but who our staff is working with and getting these frustrating responses is with staff.
Bob.
Next slide, please. This slide shows the design alternative 4A, and I'll have to just highlight a few things with the laser pointer to clarify. But again, it's two steel tanks. This area that's outside of our property is kind of crescent-shaped, kind of a moon crescent shape here, is about 2,900 square feet. We pushed the tanks within 5 feet of one another, and the way we were able to do that is we'd have to acquire a temporary tank and build it here first. That allows us to take this existing tank out, do some excavation and foundation work to build this tank first. Then we would take the temporary tank out, run on just this tank, then take the other existing tank out and build this one last. So the extra cost really comes in from putting this temporary tank here. We are able to maintain the fire access road, and we have the PG&E easement because there's going to be a pole there, and there'll be a pole here, and we underground the wires that go right through here currently. And so there is a benefit by undergrounding the wires because then you have less potential to start a fire from the overhead, so it's beneficial to the environment outside here.
And those lines went down in the 1970s and caused a pretty significant fire out there. Is that not right, Chief Putney?
They not only caused a significant fire, but they cost a young Cambria mother her life. She was electrocuted.
Just to mention the latest correspondence that we had this month on this particular layout, the concern they have now was on the 10-foot width of a PG&E easement here. PG&E will have to get a boom truck in there to serve as the pole and the overhead lines that go off in that direction there. I understand that the truck is about 8'7" wide. So that gives them about 2.5 inches on each side of their vehicle to get through this pinch point. We thought it was a little unreasonable, but apparently PG&E is willing to live with that at this point. The other point being that the 12-foot maintenance access...
How do we know PG&E is willing to live with that?
From phone conversations with them.
With PG&E?
Yeah. I actually had a... this was another one of the information requests that they made was back there, but you could still, you know, walk back there as opposed to that. But the main issue that we had, as I mentioned in one of my earlier slides, is they want to reduce the diameter from 54 feet of each of these new tanks down to 52 feet, which would have reduced our storage volume down to about 860,000 gallons. And so in their latest reply, they said, well, just we would recommend then putting an extra 2.2 feet of height on these tanks and keeping them at the 52-foot diameter. And that's where we stand today right now with them.
On the 12 feet, you know what I'm talking about when I say 12 feet?
The area here?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, they want us to reduce that, right?
Reduce that down to 8 feet.
Now, how, can you give me a ballpark of how many trees we're talking about that would be spared if you reduce it down to 8 feet?
Looks like maybe one pine there and maybe an oak or two.
Now, the one pine and the oak or two, how many of those three potential trees are alive?
I would guess they're all three are alive.
Okay. So I guess what the Coastal Commission staff is what their substantial concern here is three trees. Is that what we're talking about? Is that what's driving this, at least this specific issue, is three trees?
Yeah, they didn't get into tree numbers in their conversations.
I'm asking you as a professional. Is that where they're at?
I think it's more philosophical at this point about just square footage. Anything to say.
Kind of like Platonic form trees?
Yeah. Whatever.
Never mind.
Yeah.
One more, Bob. Is there a gradient change around the eastern edge there?
I'm sorry, I didn't
understand. Is there a gradient change? Or would you call it a retaining wall going in?
Right. The grade tends to go up as you go in this direction to the north. North is that arrow right there. So as you go in that direction, the grade doesn't increase. So we had to put a retaining wall in here to allow access around the tank.
And that cuts back on the footage they give us, right?
It does, and it, you know, just having a vertical wall to work between that and a tank just makes it physically that much more difficult for a maintenance worker,
right,
painting equipment and so forth to get through there.
Bob, the bottom line is, contrary to the assertions that were made early on at a board meeting here, there's no way that this project can go forward, and there are no alternatives to the project. There's no way this project can go forward without exceeding the boundary lines of our ownership in Pine Knolls. We have to go beyond the boundary lines of our property in order to make this project work, and it's taken low these many months in order to prove that to the Coastal Commission, and this and almost $500,000,
and still counting.
And this project, now approved by the Coastal Commission, clearly shows that it's necessary to transcend the boundary lines of our property.
Yes, and may I add a comment to that this is not by far the most superior operations project.
Right.
Okay, because that teeny tiny little 5 feet in between those two tanks, in my opinion, as somebody who has worked in the water field for 15 years, and I'll let the water operations guys even either back me up or not, while it may be doable, it's not the best alternative. Squishing in that 12 feet, like Director Funky Ballou said, it means there's no vehicles that are going to be able to get around there. We're going to have a tough time, and even though there's that area right off the emergency access road to access for divers in the future when we've got to go in there and do our tank checks, you know, it just minimizes our options. So I just want to make sure you're aware that with these compromises we've made, we have made a lot of sacrifices in our operations.
Okay.
Next slide, please, Carlos. Just in closing, I'd just like to remind everyone that the new tanks are indeed critical to public safety. That's the reason they were a priority level one project to begin with. We did careful plan design throughout the development of the tank replacement project, included a careful adherence to the CEQA process back during summer of 2004. We have established mitigation measures, mitigation monitoring plan in that process. We've made, as you could see, many good faith efforts to address their concerns. We've redesigned at least 3 tons, 1 million down to 934,000 gallons, because then you can dip into that emergency storage in the future.
But it means if the pumps are out, we basically empty the tanks in about a day.
That's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Bob, and not only is Chief Putney our fire chief, but he's also has a lot of experience in managing forests or helping to manage forests. But Bob Resson's talked about the tanks being critical to public safety. And what shocked me was we had a forest committee meeting last night, and you told us of a conversation that you had with a coastal staffer, Coastal Commission staffer, in regards to a fire sweeping town would actually be good for this forest. Do you recall that? I think that story needs to be shared with all of our neighbors. So tell us tell the community what you told us yesterday at the meeting.
One of the numerous meetings that we had with coastal staff included basically some allegations that I was exaggerating the fire potential that this community faces because the Cambria Pine Forest hasn't burned in over 200 years. One of the staffers did some research, is not a forester, is not a fire behavior specialist, and is not a tree pathologist or didn't have any background. But he read in a forest management book that conifer pines basically receive some benefit from a large-scale, hot-moving fire, because what it does is it allows the trees that are stressed and the trees that are mature to pop open their cones and to basically drop the seedlings on the ground so that they can regerminate, and it is good for forests. And that's a very common fuel modification and forest management technique that the U.S. Forest Service and the U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife uses all across the United States. But this particular pine stand, that's not the case. These pine trees, for anybody that's in Cambria or anybody that is a registered professional forester, will realize that when there's not a lot of water in the ground and the ambient temperature is up for several days, people all over Cambria hear the pine cones popping, and they see them fall to the ground, and that's when they recede. So a fire here would not be beneficial to this pine forest. In fact, the resulting landslides that occurred similar to the San Diego and Southern California firestorms of 2 years ago would level a lot of the pristine area that's here now, and Cambria would never look the same. We'd have large-scale landslides. There'd be a large invasive growth of plants and species that aren't here. And when I brought that up to them, they started to pursue it. They did some more research and realized that their information was flawed. And I really think in my heart that they did not believe any malice. They just were poorly informed. And I think that's one glimpse of a lot of the frustrations that we had going in with good research, great data, and good local knowledge. And they threw things at us that were not based in science. They were not based in public law. They were not based in the protection of this community or in the pine forest, which I believe is one of the reasons that the Coastal Commission is there, is to make sure this pine forest and this coastal area remains pristine.
Any other questions of Bob Gressens?
One final comment that was brought up during a Slo County Planning Commission meeting. That was with regard to how we were calculating our build-out. I know you probably say, Tammy, what does that have to do with the tanks? But because there was an element within the tanks for future connections that included our wait list, our 4,650 number, our cap on growth that this board has unanimously adopted for us to pursue and looking for a new water supply source and in this storage project, is the 4,650 is combined with our current existing customers, 3,900 plus the wait list. Now, there was some confusion that was reported to me that potentially the community or people are confused that that 4,650 means that this board expects 4,650 new connections.
No. There was no confusion amongst anyone living in Cambria. And everybody in Cambria knew it included
Hopefully
the 3,900, 4,000 current users
right.
plus the 600 so of the list. But up until what, a week ago, 2 weeks ago?
A couple of months ago. The
Coastal Commission staffer
mm-hmm.
thought it was 4,600 additional.
Yes. That's exactly right. So I want to make sure that it's clear for the record as it relates even to this project that that is not true.
I think it bears mentioning, too, that this project has been engineered to the 4,650 cap. Any other questions of Bob Gressens?
Bob, I really appreciate the work, and very few people know how hard that you work, and not only you, but the rest of staff on this issue, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, and I also appreciate the effort of Boyle Engineering throughout the whole process, because they've been behind
they
us all the way.
Paid pretty well to me.
Yeah, I know they're getting paid, but they
could give us a break, maybe.
One thing, Bob, perhaps you could mention that's not being mentioned is, in the meantime, the cost of steel and concrete are going way up. On a monthly basis or a daily basis?
That's correct. I haven't tracked it in recent months. I know that the world market, just as you see with gasoline, you know, China is modernizing its society and it's putting greater demand on iron ore and steel and cement. So all those products are just soaring through the roof right now. And we're in a global economy, basically. So we're competing with the rest of the world on the price of steel.
Thank you, Bob. Very much. Very good report.
Would you like me to cover the other projects?
If you can do it real quickly.
Okay. Desalination project. I just mentioned that an initial study, a mitigated neg deck, was prepared and is going out on the geotechnical investigation activities. This is for data collection work for the subsurface conditions out at San Simeon State Beach and some of the proposed pipeline alignments dealing with the future desalination project. I just want to make sure it's clear that this is covering the geotechnical activities, which is the drilling of the 4 to 6 inch diameter soil borings, and we also have a temporary ramp that we're proposing at the parking lot beach, which is south of the creek and on the west side of Highway 1 for the equipment to have access in and out of that area. So that document's going out for its public review and comment period. We purposely took a fairly conservatively safe approach on this type of project. Sometimes these are viewed as being exempt, categorically exempt, but we thought because of the listed species out there, we went through the extra effort of looking at the environmental conditions and making sure we had a mitigation and monitoring plan in place. So we will be closing those comments around the 26th of September, and we would like to propose a special meeting, if it works with your schedules, for September 29th to allow us to have the CEQA hearing on that particular item. And that would allow us to continue with our permitting on that project. So you may want to discuss that and let us know what date works for you around that time frame. We picked that date to give us a few days to respond to any written comments, and we need probably 4 or 5 days minimum to respond to written comments that might occur on the 26th of September. So that's why we picked that particular Thursday. The other point is we understand the Army Corps of Engineers has submitted their internal documents to their Washington, D.C. headquarters for the final approval process on their end so that they can finally sign the project cooperation agreement for the Water Resource Development Act funding. So that was pretty significant to get to that point with them. Moving past the desal project, just on the water master plan, I covered both the water master plan and the build-out reduction together on this item. RBF is finalizing both of those efforts. We're hoping to have an initial presentation in the October board meeting on that, and the plan is to have the build-out reduction plan made an appendix to the draft EIR for the water master plan. So that's how that's coming together at this point. We'll probably have a 45-day public review and comment period on that, which would push us to sometime in November. Most likely we'd have the certification occurring on the final EIR sometime in January. So that's roughly where we're at on that. And then lastly, the urban water management plan that got backlogged with everything else that was happening, but that's still on our hit list to work through that and get that update to the point where the Department of Water Resources is satisfied with it. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Any questions of Bob? Bob, don't run away. Can you bring back to the board for the September meeting a very brief outline of a work program necessary in order to initiate the Stewart Street tank upgrade so that we know what we need to do and the time within which we can accomplish
sure.
that? Thank you.
Do we need
Director Chaldeca?
Do we need to check dates for that meeting? He's planning?
Yeah, the 29th works for me. Does not work for you? Okay.
How long of a meeting is that going to be?
Should be very brief. Would be only one item.
So what are we talking brief? Like 5 minutes, 2 hours? Or
Bob?
I would allow an hour. We don't know what we'd get in the way of public comments on that. So, it may go very brief, but it all depends on the level of public comments that we receive at that point.
And you want this to precede the general meeting in September?
It'd be a week after the general meeting.
After, yeah. Are you out that entire week? You're out for the month. Returning when?
I'm returning on the 30th.
On the 30th. Tell you what, why don't we have the general manager after this meeting check everybody's calendar and pick the best date consistent with your travel plans? Does that work? Okay.
That'll be fine. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob, very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good job. We have I have two requests to speak on this item. The first is Wayne Gracie.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Wayne Gracie. I live 984 Manor Way, directly next to the Pine Knolls Tank Project. I'm speaking today regarding the Pine Knolls Tank Project and the ongoing battle with the Coastal Commission for trying to squeeze an industrial project of 1 million gallons of water storage onto the small lot in a residential area. The project design continues to change, forced by the Coastal Commission's stand to allow little or no intrusion into the forest. Unfortunately, these new designs again place the tanks considerably closer to the neighboring homes, increasing the potential for catastrophic damage from overflow, discharge, or failure of the tanks in an earthquake. The new designs also do not adhere to the required setbacks or height limit for the residentially zoned area of the property. As some of you who visited our home during previous design discussions may recall, the size and mass of the tanks being placed closer to the property lines will significantly shadow the home and will leave little or no room to mitigate the views of these enormous structures. I would like to make the following suggestion. Perhaps it is time for your board to consider the possibility of downsizing the project to fit entirely on your property. It seems at the minimum the existing storage capacity could be tripled. This would also leave adequate room for the much-needed fire access road and provide sufficient drainage and landscape screening as required by the approved negative deck, all within the constraints of your small lot size. By doing this, you would have much more water storage than you currently have. You should be able to easily secure Coastal Commission approval. You would solve the seismic concerns of the failing existing tanks. You could stop spending additional money for redesigns and legal battles. The cost of constructing smaller tanks would be less, and most importantly, you would prove to be good community members by being sensitive to the surrounding residential neighborhood. I realize that this may not meet your immediate goal for water storage, but it would tremendously increase the water capacity for the community and allow the project to go forward. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Wayne. Any questions of Wayne Gracie? Thank you. I also have a request to speak on this item from Lynn Christie. Lynn, I also have a request to speak during public comments, and I think the two may be related? Is that? No, they're not. Okay. Please come up.
That sounded like a good idea, Wayne's, to me. I'm going to be the bad guy here. Mr. Funky Baloo is correct when he guessed that the commissioners and the staff of the Coastal Commission are good-hearted people. It's their main goal, I know, is to protect that conservation easement. And as you know, the Coastal Act is the law of the land, passed by the voters in the early 70s, and the Coastal Commission was formed to enforce that act. So I really believe in obeying the law. This compromise, the latest compromise, I understand, gives you 5 or 6 feet onto the conservation easement, and but gives you 15% less storage than you originally wanted. Now, at the Planning Commission meeting last month that Tammy referred to, President Sanders stated that 15% was needed to reward the ratepayers for conserving water. He stated that he doesn't wash his car or water his lawn. Well, neither do most of us. We don't need to be rewarded for conserving water. That's what any responsible people would do. To some of us, not washing our cars is a badge of honor, and we're proud of our drought-tolerant gardens. We haven't watered our yard all summer. Sometimes you have to accept minor inconveniences in order to live in paradise. Your position was also that the rest of the 15% was to serve, quote, future growth, which gives some of us the shudders. It disturbs some of us to see you trying to put yourselves above the law and squandering the ratepayers' money on all these lawsuits. It's just...
Okay. Lynn, you have to confine your remarks to this particular item or bring your remarks up during public comments.
I'm almost through with the tanks. Okay?
Okay.
Except I lost my place. I live up on what's pretentiously called the top of the world, and we can see all over the place. Every fire we've seen in the 11 years we've been here has been fought not only by our fine fire department, but by helicopter drops and water tanker planes, as well as fire departments from other communities in the county and the CDF, in a real horrible conflagration. I don't think 15% more water storage would make much difference given our narrow, windy streets and our hilly terrain. So I just wish you'd accept the compromise and get the thing over with.
Thank you for your comments. We'll now move on to item 9C, which is ratification of the updated list of grandfathered commitments. Is there a staff report?
There is. This also was an item that was brought to you last month and asked to be brought back. So I broke it down into two recommendations. Nothing has changed from the exhibits as far as the grandfathered meters is concerned, except that before Joyce retired, she did kind of clean it up and put it in this little spreadsheet-type format, as you see on the third page of your staff report. So recommendation one is to approve this updated list of grandfather commitments. For the public's information, this is a list of projects that are out there before the moratorium or when it was imposed. These were the ones that were out there and active, so we keep them and we track them on this list. They change from time to time as they move through the permitting process, and that's why you've got the second page on your staff report that shows the lined through ones and why they've moved. The second recommendation is to discuss the issues that were potentially brought up last month regarding these landscape irrigation meters. And because they were historically kept on this grandfather list for a good reason, and a good reason to the staff that exists now to keep track of them so they didn't get lost, we're recommending that we just keep a separate list, and you see that on the second page of my staff report. Now, the issue does come up because these particular meters, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them, for various reasons throughout. It appears that they were established prior to the mid-80s. There are no EDU allocations associated with them. The customer simply pays for the amount of water used. They pay no sewer charges. We are recommending that they come off the grandfathered list since they have no relationship to that list, that they be maintained on a separate list so that they're tracked. But the further discussion that needs to be had among you all as policymakers is whether it would be appropriate to direct us to develop some sort of policy that addresses a consumption cap or drought limits and the relevant surcharges and maybe even a separate billing rate if appropriate. You'll see that half of them are billed at commercial rates because of probably the property status, and the other half are billed at a residential rate. A couple of the counties usually typically have no water use, and a couple of them have higher water use. So we're just looking for that direction from you all, and we will work on whatever policies you might deem appropriate.
Director Jellicott, question?
Yes, thank you. I wonder if we could ask our legal counsel to make certain that these are not potentially building sites. In other words, they're not going to end up being modified later down the road.
Well, before he answers...
That would be a project.
They are prohibited from being used for any domestic purposes or building, and even on the permit, I've seen a couple of them. They even say that whenever the permits were issued by the district.
Okay.
Have we gone out and inspected each and every one of these? No. After today, that would be a good idea to go out and see what is on the site and where this meter is located, based on your comment there. So right now, though, that they are restricted strictly for landscaping and irrigation.
Okay.
Why don't we bring this back after you've done an inspection?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate. And I'm interested in the legal obligations that the district has to continue servicing these parcels. I noticed that one of them is Rancho Marina, not even within the district boundaries. And I'm concerned about the amount of water consumption here. Two of these meters apparently are for a commercial site that has what appears to me to be drought-tolerant landscaping, yet we're getting a significant amount of water usage there. I think, in fairness to the entire community, these so-called landscape meters, which kind of were stitched out of whole cloth, they have no basis in any of the district's ordinances, amount to favors or exceptions that the rest of the ratepayers and residents of Cambria do not enjoy. And I think we need to take a very hard look at this. Any other questions of the staff? Is there a motion here? Well, the balance of the existing grandfathered list needs to be approved. That's correct.
I would do that. Then I'd move approval of item number one in the recommendation.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And the staff will report back with some recommendations with respect to these so-called irrigation or landscape meters.
And it may be a couple of months, but yes, we will.
Thank you. The last item on the regular agenda is consideration of adoption of a resolution authorizing a memorandum of understanding with the community center. Is there a staff report?
Before she does it,
yes.
Mr. President, I've been advised by legal counsel that I should recuse myself for this item, so I'm going to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Tammy,
Director Funky Blue, go
thank
ahead.
Thank you. As some of you may know, I've been trailing this issue for a while, and I got the report yesterday, and then I got the financials today. I am not prepared to make any intelligent decision. I just haven't had enough time. I'm not being critical. I know we've had other issues, but I would like to put this over to next month so I have a chance to review the agenda items and the financials that I got today. So I'm making that request before we have any discussion.
Request seems reasonable to me. If you haven't had time to review the material, and I've been in a position like that myself from time to time, what is the consequence to the community center of putting this over for 1 month?
I'm not aware of any consequence. Are you, Patrick? Oh, is somebody here from the community center? Okay. If you want to hear from that person.
Sure. Come on up. Welcome.
Cynthia Rawlings Matthews, new president of the Community Center. Pleased to be here today addressing Mr. Funky Ballou, Director Funky Ballou's issue about putting the vote on hold on the MOU. Many changes have taken place at the Community Center, all extraordinarily positive. In answer to your first basic question, if in fact you withhold the $50,000, you will in fact be withholding money that the community center needs to continue its operation, as you must be well aware. The director of the center has taken a cut of 1/4 of her salary. She volunteered to do this, and that will, in effect, cover the remaining tax payroll debt. The bills are being paid. There are proposed staff cutbacks, some of which are already in effect, which will increase the funds available for the community center. The camp this year was almost double the number of children from last year.
Okay, can you just address for now the consequences of a continuance? Isn't there some money left over from the first increment of $50,000 that was approved?
As far as I recall, Patrick, there are. Aren't there a balance from last year's MOU?
It's $3,900 and change.
And they may be in the process of submitting a reimbursement request. I'm not aware, but they may be.
Yes, there is. But there are, from the various fundraisers in the course of the past month or so, there are funds that could be reimbursed through your MOU and your continued support
sure.
of the community center.
But the basic question is, can you get along financially until the September meeting?
I'm not in a position to answer the question, but I would say with a personal feeling that it would deprive the community center of money, which it needs to continue the forward progress that it has been making over the past few months.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
What's the pleasure of the board?
I do see a problem because if Ms. Coven can't participate and I'm away next month, that means there's only three possible votes, which will be needed, I believe, to pass anything.
Hmm.
So, and the same would occur the next month because you're away.
Hmm. You're away in October?
Mm-hmm. When is the meeting in October? What?
The date is October 27th.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be willing to have a special meeting if it's necessary in order to have a quorum here. Perhaps next week.
Next week would be fine.
Or the following week.
Because we can accommodate it as long as the schedule permits it, or we can get it into Suite 204 if we have no room here. Because it's Pine Dorado week, so it's probably going to be difficult to get in here.
The following week would be better for me.
Director Chaldicott?
I'm available.
I'm available till the 5th.
Okay. Then the general manager can poll the directors and determine the best date to have a special meeting to consider this item. That would give Director Funky Ballou the opportunity to review the material. Director Villeneuve, do you want to weigh in on this?
I don't have my calendar with me.
Okay.
I'm marked off without it. But if it's early part of the, right after the Pine Dorado, I'm quite certain that I could be available.
All right. I detect a consensus here to continue this item until a special meeting to be called by me after conferring with the general manager on the appropriate date. I have two requests to speak on this item. Can those who submitted requests to speak wait until the special meeting and address the board on the issue at that time? Jerry?
I would like to make some questions that perhaps in your special meeting you will have answers for.
Please come up then.
My name is Jerry McKinnon. I live here in Cambria. I work with the Youth Coalition Group as a member of that organization and vitally concerned about the success of the Youth Center, as I would like to call it. My memory is not that strong, but I thought that when you brought about the resolution last time authorizing the $50,000, that it was to be spent only on fundraising activities. The resolution that you're discussing, that you will discuss, talks about providing money for community events and fundraising activities. And I'm concerned whether that is an addition to the original or whether I'm just mistaken in my memory. The second point, I was under the impression that under the current operation, the community center would submit an invoice for particular expenses and then be reimbursed by the district. This one, it appears to me that you're going to give them $4,500 every 3 months, or break it down to $12,500 every 3 months, or about $4,500 a month, without their issuing an invoice on how the money was spent. You'll be asking for an accounting every quarter on how the money was spent, but not with every activity that goes along. And I'm wondering whether that is really what we want to change, considering that they are making changes in the method of operation and bookkeeping and so forth without proof in the pudding that they are effectively using the money. Why you want to go to an immediate accounting system where you give them money every quarter? Those are my two concerns: whether the money is going to be spent for community activities, and then a side note on that, does that mean the employee expenses included in the community activities? And the other question is whether on the fundraising activities, if the fundraiser is successful, it appears as though the seed money would be recouped through the fundraising activity, so whatever is invested in that fundraising activity is still there to operate the next fundraising activity. So those are my concerns. Thank you.
We'll have answers for you, Jerry. I also have a request to speak. Form submitted by Bernie Grossman. Bernie?
Thank you. My comment here has nothing to do with whether or not the $50,000 is given. My comment has to do with whether the board of the CCSD is going to take a position on the board of the community center. Your comment here on page 2, which says since they have basically virtually an all-new members on their board, should there be someone from the CCSD? Just as Joan Coben, who is the secretary of the community center, recused herself, it is also felt that there should be someone or designee of the CCSD should be on the CCC board. This would represent the community on both sides of the continuance of the center and the spending of the general funds. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bernie. This item is continued then until a special meeting to be called, and the appropriate notice of the special meeting will be given. It's now time for the public comment portion of the agenda. We have a number of requests to speak. There will be a three-minute time limit imposed on each speaker in view of the late hour. And the first request to speak, she's requested that she be allowed to speak first, and I'll honor that request. Jan Howell Marks, to be followed by Lynn Christie.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairman and Cambria Community Services Board. My name is Jan Hale Marks, and I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo. I'm here today to urge the Cambria Community Services District to withdraw your statement to the California Attorney General's Office that you intend to subpoena Eric Greening and or Pamela Hetherington. In my view, this would be in retaliation for their testifying in public on the Pine Knolls Tank project, just as people did today. I am glad I got to hear about that project from you. It's clear that this board is angry and frustrated, but this does not make it right to take it out on the members of the public who testify. Are you going to now subpoena Wayne Gracie or Lynn Christie for testifying on this project? I am an attorney, but I do not represent Eric Greening or Pamela Hetherington at the present time. You are urged to make such withdrawal by resolution or by letter of instruction to your contract attorney, David Cumberland, copied to the Attorney General's office, and also to Eric Greening and or Pamela Hetherington. Failure to do so will risk liability on the part of the CCSD under the U.S. and California Constitution, the Brown Act, the Anti-SLAPP Act as well. I have passed out a text of my letter to you, which I do not have time to read in full, but on page 3 of the attachment, you will see this is the declaration of Jim Sauerman, who is the Deputy Attorney General assigned to this case. You will see that he has, under sworn testimony, stated that Attorney Cumberland asked to take the depositions of Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening, and they went so far as to select the dates for those depositions. This is abuse of process, abuse of the discovery process, and it is a bad precedent. This is the kind of thing that extremist groups and litigants throughout the country are using against people who speak out in public. And I urge you not to take that step. This is the first public entity in the county of San Luis Obispo that has gone this far, and it must stop now. The community will not tolerate this kind of governmental intimidation against citizens who are exercising their freedom of speech. The CCSD is urged to withdraw its threat to subpoena Eric Greening or Pamela Hetherington immediately, and failure to do so will demonstrate to everyone the district's deliberate intent to violate the First Amendment rights of Eric Greening, Pamela Hetherington, and chill the freedom of speech of those testifying at public hearings. Thank you.
Thank you. Lynn Christie, followed by Andrew Christie.
Well, I'm making up for all the times that I haven't spoken to you here. I voted for each and every one of you directors, and some of you in more than one election. But I'm a little worried that our beloved village is sort of heading in the wrong direction these days. I want to talk now about PROS, which is a dedicated, productive volunteer group. And you're contemplating reducing the 12 or 14 member board to 5 and cutting their meetings from every month to 4 times a year. I'm displaying your penchant for hiring outside experts by hiring a paid parks and recreation director. I agree completely with Mr. Villeneuve with what he said last month, that if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
and which he said again today, and PROS sure ain't broke. Can I talk about one more thing?
Sure.
Another troublesome development is your push for incorporation with the Blue Ribbon Incorporation Committee. Why Blue Ribbon? We note it's not an exploratory or an investigatory committee. It's an incorporation committee. This has been tried several times before in Cambria and defeated every time, but a lot of us are afraid this time you'll have some, probably have big money, outside money behind you, and will no doubt hire an expert PR firm to maximize the spin. Maybe some of us should start a Green Ribbon Anti-Incorporation Committee. Incorporation always brings increased growth. I'm sure the developers and the speculators will be lurking in the wings. Thank you.
Blue is cool, green is cool, but red is not.
Andrew Christie of Los Osos, followed by David Broadwater of Atascadero.
Well, thank you, President Sanders, but my speaker slip was filed on agenda item 9B.
I beg your pardon.
Thank you.
Would you like to address that now, since you're at the podium?
Sierra Club concurs with the American Lands Conservancy and the North Coast Swap on the preservation of the conservation easement at East West Ranch.
Thank you, and I apologize for the oversight. David Broadwater of Atascadero, followed by Maria Lorca of Creston.
Yes, my name is David Broadwater of Atascadero. I have a brief comment that I would like to read to you. I've distributed one for each board member, staff, and council. I have two messages for you. Back off and fess up. By back off, I mean you should immediately discontinue your desires, intents, and or plans to issue deposition subpoenas on Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening. Secondly, you should direct all your lawyers to cease and desist from all plans and or work related to deposing Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening, including but not limited to Art Montandon, Stephen Kaufman, David Cumberland, and Wendy Stockton. I do not want to hear any repetition of the obfuscation, denial, and evasion you used when confronted with this matter at your July meeting. Nor do I want to hear a repetition of a long list of irrelevant things you haven't done or more feigned ignorance of the truth. Because the truth is that you do plan to issue deposition subpoenas on Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening. And the proof that I got from the Superior Court is in this declaration right here, which says it in black and white. That your lawyer made it clear that that's exactly what your plans are. Secondly, the proof is in the phone conversation that I had with John Saruman, the state's deputy attorney general, whose number is here, and I called, and he verified it over in that phone conversation. So the truth is plain to see. Secondly, I do not want to hear any repetition of your claims that this represents an ordinary exercise of your subpoena rights. Nor do I want to hear you again compare your actions to, quote, our government investigating a terrorist. Because this abuse of power for vindictive and political purposes is an extraordinary infringement on all citizens' rights to speak, assemble, and petition the government freely and without retribution. By publicly wielding this tool as a weapon for 3 months now, as of tomorrow, you misuse your own rights and represent a direct threat to all citizens' rights under the Constitution and Bill of Rights, whether they're Cambrians or not. Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening and others publicly opposed a site plan for your water tanks. You lost, but you have an approved project now. Yet you continue to litigate and hunt them down. What for? Is it to exact retribution on your political opponents and attempting to intimidate and silence any others who might think of getting in your way? Well, it sure looks, waddles, and quacks like that kind of duck. Finally, I don't want to hear that it's impossible for you to take immediate action and terminate your litigious pursuit of these two individuals, nor a repetition of your claim that you constrained from discussing it because it's part of, quote, pending litigation discussed only in your secret closed sessions. This is a matter of public record and has been for 2 months. This was filed on June 24th in Superior Court. Since your decision to pursue these two people wasn't ever on your public agenda, no rules regarding due public notice of agenda has prevent you from rescinding this decision right now. There's absolutely nothing stopping you. It should be obvious by now that any further delay or continued obfuscation, denial, and evasion will only make matters worse for you and those you serve. Isn't it apparent that the costs of pursuing this course of action far outweigh whatever benefits you may accrue to you and your ratepayers? You have the opportunity right now to do the right, the honorable, and the smart thing. I remind you that the next scheduled Superior Court proceedings in your litigation in October are open to the public and to the media, but this has already gone on for 3 months, and that's far too long to wait for us and for you. So do it now. Back off and drop your plans to depose Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening. And for the second message, just to conclude, which is fess up. You owe it to your ratepayers to provide a full and detailed accounting of your expenditures on this litigation and subpoena planning and other questionable litigation of late. They deserve more than a repetition of your July 28th vague allusion to $50,000 and failure to divulge particular payments. They also deserve to know that when what they can expect to gain from more of their money being spent on such lawsuits in the future. But as a property owner and homeowner in San Luis Obispo County, I want you to stop wasting my tax dollars by taking up valuable Superior Court time and facilities in your frivolous and destructive vendetta. So back up, fess up, and do it right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Maria Lorca of Creston, followed by Susan Harvey of Paso Robles.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I'm Maria Lorca. Is it? Okay.
You're on.
I live in Creston, and I've been a county resident for 46 years. Last month, I came to your meeting to ask that you drop your plan to depose Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening, and that you disclose what you have spent on litigation. I'm here today to repeat that request and to add a few comments, brief comments, about why this intimidation of the opposition matters. At your last meeting, I felt that I had to ask that you not attack me because the previous speaker had been interrupted, questioned, and in a frightening manner to me. And I am ashamed of being afraid of you, but I was. And when I went home and Googled Nossaman and realized the connection to that huge law firm, I worried that you might also target me. President Sanders is a partner in the Nossaman firm, and I realized that I might have provoked powerful, well-connected people with apparently unlimited financial resources. You might ask why the threat of being hauled in for a deposition is intimidating. First, there's no real way to respond to or refute being placed on a list of people who might be questioned. If a subpoena is actually issued, then you can hire a lawyer to show that you have no relevant information, and that would be expensive, but that would be that. But a threat, you know, I might want to question you sometime, just hangs there. One of the freedoms we value is the freedom to criticize government. Public participation and support for that participation from responsive government is what we strive for in this country at every level, even right here in this little town. For every person who takes the time to study an issue, travel to a meeting, and speak in public, there are many others who would do the same but do not have the time or the courage. And I just barely do this, kind of like a near-death experience, but by threatening to subpoena activists to oppose your policies, you cause every one of us to consider carefully the risk and the expense of speaking out. That's intimidation. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Susan Harvey of Paso Robles, followed by Doug Buckmaster of Cambria.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Harvey, and I've returned again to ask the same thing, that you remove Eric Greening and Pam Hetherington from the threat of subpoena in the case regarding the Pine Knolls water tank issue. With the submission from Attorney Jan Hal Marks, you have now in your possession proof that you had an intention to subpoena Pam and Eric. There seemed to be some confusion at the last meeting as to whether you have had ever intended that. And for the public, I'll read from a declaration from John Saruman. On June 3rd of 2005, Mr. Cumberland informed me that the district wanted to take the depositions of two other individuals, Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening. I questioned the relevance of these depositions, and Mr. Cumberland informed me that the district believed that Ms. Christie had spoken to Ms. Hetherington and Mr. Greening about the Pine Knolls tank project. So have we come to the point where if someone speaks to an employee of a public agency or anyone else, that they can become the object of a possible subpoena? I'd like to also read one paragraph from the letter submitted by Ms. Marks. If the CSD had subpoenaed either Eric Greening or Pamela Hetherington, you would have been quickly served with a motion to quash and the motion for protective order. And you would lose big time because, one, the matter is on appeal, thus all testimony has already been entered, and, two, Eric Greening and or Pamela Hetherington's testimony has no relevance. A motion to quash will be granted where there is no information sought reasonably calculated to lead to discovery of admissible evidence in the pending actions. Not that there really is a pending action in this case because the CCSD has lost the case. Plus, it is entirely possible that besides losing such a motion to quash, the district would be subject to sanctions for its intentional conduct. I'd like to repeat my request that you, in writing, remove Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening as possible recipients of a subpoena. Thank you.
Thank you. Doug Buckmaster, followed by John McGarry of Cambria.
Good afternoon, honorable directors. I really like your new furniture, and I love the new fireproof screen behind you, which I understand was provided primarily by the Lions Club, the American Legion, and private donors. CCSD apparently can come up with a grant for furniture, but not for fire protection. I'm Doug Buckmaster, ratepayer of Cambria, and like you, I'm concerned about the excessive cost of pursuing a huge new water tank on Pine Knolls. This has been a star-crossed project, and not a shovel of soil has been turned over. I highly appreciate Bob Gresson's report, even though it took some of the wind out of my sails. I've had to revise my remarks here dramatically. But much of the expense, I'm certain, is partially because of an ill-conceived vendetta against the California Coastal Commission. The commission simply has been doing its job of trying to enforce the Coastal Act, which the voters overwhelmingly put in place in 1972. The district insisted on invading an environmentally sensitive habitat area, especially one which was covered by a conservation easement, just like the wetlands across the street. The Coastal Commission naturally reacted. The district lost. And it's gone on and on, as Bob related. This community owes a great deal to the California Coastal Commission and those who served on it in January of 1998. Their Stopping East-West Ranch development plan saved you 735 homes, which would use a lot of water, and it also saved the horrendous Hearst Ranch projects, resort projects. Led to our buying of the ranch and the ability to visit it whenever we want to enjoy open space, and it also led to no massive construction up the coast, which would have created daily gridlocks on Highway 1. With all the workers and the construction vehicles back and forth every day. Many people are here today, and negative press has been directed toward your board because of some decisions you've made. I'm distressed not only at the great expense with nothing to show for it for the tanks, but also at the part of that expense caused by the charade of threatened depositions of two activists whose judgment and honesty I highly respect. I hope you'll see the obvious error in this pursuit and cease it immediately, and save Cambria ratepayers' money. Thank you.
Thank you. John McGarry, followed by Dennis Kish of Cayucas.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John McGarry. I am a resident of Cambria. I'm recently informed the county has received a draft tsunami plan, and I'd like to ask the chief if he might comment on its relevance for us here in Cambria.
Chief?
Thank you, John. The county of San Luis Obispo was the last county in the state of California under a contract with the State Office of Emergency Services. A grant was awarded to basically do tsunami planning for all the inundation areas along coastal zones of the entire length of California. We were the last county to receive that data, partially because of the tsunami that occurred overseas. The people doing that wanted to research it. So we've just gotten the data. We're looking at a 50-foot inundation area in Cambria. We just have the maps. I'm going to be meeting with executive staff and basically getting feedback back to the county OES, as well as all the other jurisdictions, cities, and areas of San Luis Obispo County is, so that we can get together a fully operational and reasonable plan. So we finally have the data. We were waiting for several months to get that, and so we'll be looking at that and verifying, because of our local knowledge of our area, that the data they've given us for tsunami inundation is in fact correct. So we're working on it.
When that plan is finished, can you brief the board and hence the public on the
Absolutely.
Plan?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Dennis Kish of Cayucas, followed by Klaus Schumann of Paso Robles.
Mr. President and members of the board, Dick Gregory, the comedian and civil rights activist, used to say, "When I move into a new neighborhood, I always put on a white sheet and burn a cross on my own lawn. I figure after I've done that, what can they say to me?" So I'm wearing my outsider's badge. So I'm an outsider. But the matter I wish to talk about transcends the local versus outsider distinction. You notice how many of us there are today speaking to you from the greater San Luis Obispo County community. Your board is considering subpoenas to depose two citizens, Eric Greening and Pam Hetherington, who spoke in opposition to your project. Are you then alleging that they have information about the project that they shouldn't have? Some secret knowledge, perhaps. Maybe a bit of truth. If that is the case, how are either of them acting differently than, say, Daniel Ellsberg, who released the Pentagon Papers, or the person who recently published the Downing Street memos? Ellsberg was never successfully charged with leaking information, and nobody's been charged in the Downing Street affair. I think you have a very flaccid argument here, one that will not stand the test. Our government works best when information flows freely. I ask you not to act to muddy the waters. Or perhaps you could try the new wonder drug, Lexagra, guaranteed to stiffen your arguments. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
That's one of the most firm arguments I've heard in a long time, don't you?
Pretty solid.
Good afternoon. My name is Klaus Schumann. I came today here from Paso Robles, and I also want to address the Eric Greening, Pam Hesling, brouhaha. I'm not here to take sides or pass judgment on you or anybody else, but I do feel very strongly about the issue of public participation. And therefore, I would really want to make an appeal to you to avoid anything which would leave a chilling effect on public participation in your meetings. A flourishing democracy depends on active citizens. I have known Pam and Eric for a great many years, and I have always experienced them as being very well reasoned and very well researched. I know they can be very convincing. And I think and I hope that government entities like you would actually welcome their input and would avoid anything, you know, to have a chilling effect on their participation. I've testified myself many, many times in front of the Board of Supervisors and planning commissions, Paso Robles City Council, you name it, I have been there. And I would say if I would have to expect legal entanglement like subpoenas or anything like that, that would have a chilling effect on my desire to participate in government. Let me just conclude by quoting or paraphrasing one of our founding fathers, I believe it was Thomas Jefferson, who said the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. But when the price of vigilance becomes entanglement in legal procedures, then something is wrong with our democracy. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Bob McDonald of Cambria, followed by Ron Crummett of Cambria.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob McDonald. I live near our east-west ranch, which is so beautiful. And I want to say that with all these people from outside our little community speaking about stopping the deposition or not considering it further, I have to say amen to that. And they've all said it so well that I don't think I need to say it again. So thank you, and I hope you will proceed with that program.
Thank you, Bob. Ron Crummett of Cambria, followed by Jerry McKinnon of Cambria.
Good afternoon. Ron Crummett, chairman of the Concerned Cambrians group. I agree that there are too many outsiders getting into our business. I don't think we need somebody coming in to our little town and telling us who we can depose and not depose. No one is above a subpoena. Both Eric and Pam Heatherton, both of them fine people, have not been subpoenaed yet, and they may not ever be subpoenaed. A lawsuit, parties have a right to submit to subpoena witnesses, and that would be for Pam and Eric if they were in a similar situation. Any of the costs that have been incurred in this are out in the open for anybody out here or through on TV land to see. Nothing is hidden in terms of the financial obligations that have been taken up by this situation. I think, as one gentleman said, maybe fess up is the name of the game, but I think the fess up should be on the party of the activists. Let's face it, they're worried about Cambria setting a precedent and maybe somehow stopping their activist activity in this county. Moreover, they're worried about other governmental agencies rising up to the same level of protecting of our own citizens and fighting for our own rights and thereby diminishing their activity. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Ron. Jerry McKinnon of Cambria, followed by Dave Crowther of Cambria.
Jerry McKinnon, Cambria. As I walked out of the door to come to this meeting, the last words I heard were, "Don't make a fool of yourself." Well, what do you know? Here I am.
My wife tells me that every day.
This is an issue of head versus heart. And this is in my heart. And I'll tell it this way. Don't get in my way when it comes to public safety. Don't get in my way when it comes to public safety. Cambria is my home. Cambrians are my friends and my family. Don't get in my way in order to protect them. Eric Greening and Pam Heatherton need to apologize for jeopardizing our safety by trying to not have those tanks built. If they'll apologize, then I'll encourage you to withdraw your subpoenas. It's all a measure of intent. I believe their intent is to endanger Cambria, or it's an unintended consequence. But whatever it is, back off, you outsiders. Let Cambria protect itself. Thank you.
And the final request to speak for him is from Dave Crowther.
My name is Dave Crowther. I'm a Cambria area rancher, and I come to the podium to express my admiration and appreciation of the CCSD board, their patience, their good manners, and their courtesy that's been demonstrated. I think we all have a right to be proud of that, and there's been enough provocation to test that patience, and I'm grateful that we have you representing us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave. With that, ladies and gentlemen, the meeting is adjourned. Meeting's adjourned.